Of the Tri-State region with a relaxing atmosphere 7 days a week. Food, friends, and fun the old-fashioned way, 860-364-9355. You'll find them on Facebook, Sharon Valley Tavern. Associated Lightning Rod, Route 22 in Millerton, installing lightning protection for homes and businesses for well over 50 years, 518-789-4603, ALRCI.com on the web. Sagala Turnkey Housing, Route 7 in Canaan, an authorized independent builder for Westchester Modular Homes, 860-824-0019, sagalas.com. Roaring Oaks Florist in Lakeville, Connecticut. Unique designs with personal attention. RoaringOaksFlorist.com. Dave's TV, Route 44 in Millerton, New York. Everything for home entertainment. Video, audio, satellite TV, 518-789-3881. Dave'sTV.net. McEnroe Organic Farm Market, Route 22 in Millerton. Open year-round 7 days a week. 518-789-4191. McEnroeOrganicFarm.com. Northeast Muffler, Route 22 in Millerton, New York. 518-789-3669. On Facebook, Northeast Muffler. Upcountry Services in Sharon, serving the northwest corner and neighboring Dutchess County for over 30 years. 800-791-2916. UpcountryServices.com.
Morning, listeners. It's Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio. October 14th. All right. Good morning, listeners. It's Sunday, October 14th. You're listening to Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio. Thank you. We have a few PSAs this morning. The Sharon Fire Department and Ambulance Squad is having their pancake breakfast this morning until 10:30. It's a great way to start the week by supporting the volunteers and join us for a full buffet breakfast. Dover Plains is having their pancake breakfast this morning at the Dover Station, 3133 on Route 22 in Dover Plains. This is happening until 11 a.m. Adults are $8. Children are $6. Four and under are free. Takeout is available. Finally, the Sharon Valley Tavern is having their double elimination cornhole tournament today. It starts at noon. It's a $10 buy-in. Draw for teams, first and second prizes. The rain date is the 21st, starts at noon. It's always good fun, good friends, and good times. It's Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio. I'm Chad Wildy.
Farmer Paul.
I'm NASCAR Dave. Welcome to this edition of Hometown Sunday Morning. We're going to do a little different show this morning. We're going to hold off on our troop tribute for just a little bit. Because joining us in the studio this morning is Brian Oler. He's the incumbent in the 64th District.
Yes.
Wow, and I haven't been in Sharon in a long, long time. I pulled that one out. So we want to get to talk to him a little bit later on. I'm sure Willie Hallahan will be calling. We have some interviews from Jeannie Saller we're going to play. And then somewhere around 10:30, we have a special guest coming in, Kyle Barton, who has a tremendous award was obtained this past week out at the World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. So really excited about that. I think one of the Town of Northeast board members is also coming in, and I'm kind of remiss, Paul, because I don't remember his name, but we'll figure it out when
it
he gets here.
Ralph Adele?
No, it's not Ralph.
Oh.
No, it's the guy that ran with Ralph.
Oh, yes.
So anyway, he's coming in. So we do have a busy schedule, and once again, that pancake breakfast runs till 10:30 at the firehouse. It's phenomenal. And Brian, welcome to Hometown Sunday Morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, to start off, you went to the pancake breakfast this morning.
I did. I was there bright and early. It was delicious.
They do an awesome job with the way they have the buffet-type setup.
Yeah, it's always the second Sunday of every month.
And yep.
They've been doing this for years. It's a great tradition, and anytime we can get over there to support them, it's a great cause.
Now, I also saw you last night at the roast beef dinner. And I've got to tell you what, that roast beef was to die for.
I think I should have had an overnight room in Sharon. I spent most of the weekend here.
Okay, so election time coming up for the seat again. And you've been in two terms now?
This is my first term.
This is your first term still. So what are some of the things that you've accomplished? I know I hear a lot about the Sharon Hospital is a hot topic. I hear a lot about veterans because you're a veteran yourself and you're a big advocate for veterans. So tell us some of the things that that you're on top of and you've been accomplished.
Yeah, these last 2 years really have flown by. I can't believe it's time to run again. But we've certainly accomplished a lot, but there's still a lot left to do. Being a freshman legislator and being on the Appropriations Committee, on the Public Safety Committee and Human Services, we've really had an opportunity to really dig into the budget. As we know, we're facing a huge deficit in the next 2 years, upwards of $4 billion. Our unfunded liabilities in Connecticut are upwards of $80 billion. So it's a big hole to fill. But Connecticut residents and the residents of Northwest Corner, they're relying on us to have the foresight to see what the proper corrections are and where we can make those structural changes within the budget. And thankfully, last year, we were able to finally pass a truly bipartisan budget, which was the first time that's happened in Connecticut in over half a century.
Wow.
Because our numbers are so close. We're tied in the Senate. We're off by a few seats in the House. So because our numbers are so close, it forced both sides to finally come together and negotiate and have that cordial dialogue, that collegial talking points that we can really look at. Listen, the Republicans are looking for this. The Democrats are looking for this. Where can we meet in the middle? And we did ask the governor to step out of the room because he seemed to be a common thorn in everyone's side. But we were able to achieve a bonding cap, a spending cap. We now get to approve all of the union negotiations that are signed off by the governor. They have to come to the legislature. So while it wasn't a perfect budget, we were able to achieve some safeguards. And looking over to the veteran side, myself being an Army veteran after 12 years serving in Iraq and Afghanistan and coming back home, being the first post 9/11 combat veteran voted to the General Assembly.
And really?
Yes. I wasn't aware of that until some of my veteran colleagues had told me. They're like, hey, we don't think there's anybody post 9/11 era serving in the General Assembly. We think you're the first one. And I was very humbled by that title, but knew that not only was I representing now the Northwest Corner, I was representing all of the veterans in Connecticut. And we were able to pass a groundbreaking law that is, when I explain it, you're going to say, well, that just seems like a no-brainer. Why isn't it replicated elsewhere? But as it stands right now, if a veteran received an other than honorable discharge because of their PTSD from service, post-traumatic stress, TBI, which is traumatic brain injury, or MST, military sexual trauma, if they had an OTH discharge, they are not able to receive any benefits in Connecticut or the federal VA. So there's no tuition assistance, there's no mental health assistance, nothing from the VA hospitals at all. So we led a charge with IAVA, which is Iraq and Afghanistan Vets of America, the VFW, American Legion. All these service organizations came to the table and said, listen, these people deserve their benefits more than most because they are struggling because of a service-related issue. Just because they're discharged with an OTH, you're sending them back home with no opportunity to heal. So we testified. It was very emotional testimony in the springtime, and everyone came in to tell their stories, and I'm very happy to say that it passed unanimously in the House and Senate. So Connecticut is the first state in the nation to pass this.
Now, the state is going to fund that part of it for state for our state veterans, for state veterans?
We right now there's roughly 800 veterans in Connecticut that fall into this particular category. And doing the numbers, we don't think it's a huge expense for the state, given what these individuals had gone through. You know, they served with their blood and tears, and we owe it to them to make sure that they can heal.
Yeah. You're right. You're 100% right. That's the first I'd heard of that. Yeah. I didn't know. So that's nationwide. Nationwide, they don't get the care.
They don't get this. So now, you know, we're going to storm the hill, they call it. There's a lot of veterans organizations that go down to Washington, and they speak with the federal delegation. But this just seems like a no-brainer. And I think a lot of people aren't aware that they're not receiving these benefits. So the more people that know about this, the more we can shed some light on it. Hopefully everyone can follow suit with Connecticut.
Well, I didn't realize that you get discharged if you have a brain injury or a PTSD and they send you home.
Well,
it's not an honorable discharge?
Yeah,
it's so depending. Strange. So if you have PTSD from serving overseas,
right.
And you get into a bar fight, right. Or you fight with your company commander, you'll get another dishonorable discharge because of those actions. Hmm. But that action was rooted into your mental instability from TBI or PTSD because of Iraq and Afghanistan or Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
We have Vietnam vets that fall under this category.
Same thing.
So that action, we're saying, wouldn't have happened if they weren't suffering from these ailments. Mm-hmm. So they need to get the help that they deserve.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel, you did a great job.
It's been a lot.
I bet those 800 guys are pretty excited, and gals. What the hell if they never got, if they had to, I don't know, how would they get care? I mean,
they just
let it go.
And there's Vietnam veterans that have come up to me in tears that for 40, 50 years they've kept everything inside because our government turned their backs on them. America didn't welcome them home as they are today. And some of them have come up and said, for the first time, I actually feel like a veteran.
Nice.
And they're just so grateful. And that's what makes it all worth it. You know, the long hours we put in out there, the talking and the negotiating, it's all worth it when you see the final product. And we recently re-stood up the Fire and EMS Caucus, Legislative Caucus out in Hartford, myself being a volunteer firefighter and an EMT in Canaan in Falls Village. We saw an opportunity where our first responders really weren't given the voice that they deserved out there. So a caucus is a group of legislators that come together for a collective interest. So, a lot of people, I don't know anybody who doesn't support first responders, but we're the second largest caucus in Hartford now. Over 52 legislators are members of this caucus, and we talk about firefighter cancer, the toxins and carcinogens that these firefighters are coming down with, especially those who responded to Ground Zero in New York City. We're looking at a number of protections for first responders because we are frequently assaulted on scene with somebody who may be psychotic or have another issue going on. So we are protected that way when we're looking at health benefits or even life benefits. So it's given a bigger voice to people who may not have had it in the past.
Wow. And I know Sharon Hospital has been a hot topic for quite a while. What seems to be going on there?
Well,
I just talked to somebody, a couple from Millerton, just had a baby the other day.
Yeah.
And they went there and they were very happy with the care, but it wasn't like they had that birthing suite or whatever, I guess. I don't know. But
the announcement of this closure took everybody by surprise back in the summer. And there was basically no warning to this coming about. We had they call it a town hall type meeting back in May. It was in the Sharon Town Hall. And HealthQuest administrators came out and they spoke of all of the great things they were doing, all the money they wanted to invest or reinvest. And not once was maternity mentioned as a possible area to close. So when we found out about this right around July 4th, there were mothers who were calling me crying, not knowing what their future looked like because they were in their second or third trimester, many of them just weeks away from giving birth. And now this news came out, and they were just unsure of their future. So I did my best working with Senator Minor, working with Brent Colley, the first selectman in Sharon, and we got to speak with Peter Cordeau, Christina McCulloch, the chief nursing officer in Sharon, and we just wanted answers because this took all of us by surprise. And, you know, they quickly backpedaled. I think they had a communication plan that wasn't rolled out effectively. And I don't know if they just had it in their minds that they thought they were going to announce this and everyone was going to accept it, but it was the exact opposite. At a time when we're trying to attract younger families to the area, when women's health are certainly paramount in any healthcare discussion, having the opportunity to give labor and deliver, or go into labor and deliver at the hospital where you were previously seeking your prenatal care, you know, this, we need that full service capability. And now we fast forward 5 months. HealthQuest seems to continue to backpedal from their from what their aspirations were in July. They're in the process of trying to acquire Western Connecticut Health Network, which is basically all of the healthcare institutions along the Route 7 corridor down to Norwalk, Connecticut.
Really?
It is. And, you know, I feel that they've certainly dropped the ball here in Sharon. They have a 3-year contractual obligation that they signed and they agreed to, and we intend to hold them to that. But more specifically, they're not very open to having meetings with us anymore, because I think they do realize the damage that they made. But looking at Western Connecticut Health Network and their certificate of need process, there are going to be opportunities for public hearings for people to come in and speak favorably or not favorably for this acquisition. And just because it's Western Connecticut Health Network doesn't mean that other entities that fall under HealthQuest can't be spoken about. So that's going to be our opportunity to go in and put them on record and talk about Sharon and say, you know, what you tried to do in Sharon really angered a lot of people and it questioned our trust with you. And we may not be as favorable to you acquiring Western Connecticut Health Network because of what you did in Sharon. So I think there's still some hiccups in the future for them.
Wow. So you've had a full-blown 2 years by the sounds of things, huh?
It's been baptism by fire, I'll say that.
Is it rewarding, Brian? Are you happy you ran when you decided to?
Yeah, it's very rewarding. And my phone is always on. Everyone has my cell phone number. And when you consider constituent service, it's not just returning an email that you may have gotten in your Hartford office. You know, people want to know that you're approachable, that you're receptive to their concerns. My phone rings at midnight because someone lost power. I answer it. If there's a roadblock, if someone's having a problem with social services, their unemployment check didn't come in, they know they can call me directly. They're not going to have to go through 4 or 5 channels to get a hold of me. They can see me in the grocery store, in the gas station. They know that I'm always working. I never take a day off. But it's not because I have no other life. It's because I truly value the position, and people want to know that their representative and their voice is working for them day in and day out.
Now, the 64th District, it's all of Region 1, right?
All of Region 1, the 6 towns. it also includes the southern half of Goshen, the western third of Torrington, and Norfolk. Yeah, so every 10 years they redistrict.
Oh, I see. And so you have part of Torrington, part of Goshen, and all of Norfolk.
Yes.
So that's a pretty big area, though. It's quite a population when you think about it.
It is.
It's spread out, very diverse.
We're tied as the largest house district in Connecticut with 9 towns.
Wow.
Yeah. 500 square miles.
Wow. That's a lot of
You've got to put a lot of miles on in a year for sure.
In a year and almost 2 years now, I've put on 64,000 miles on my car.
Wow. So looking forward, what are some of the things you still would like to see through?
It's definitely the economy, jobs. The Northwest Corner is a very unique place, and we still need to appreciate our history, recognize that we're a bucolic area for a reason. Our ecotourism is thriving, but we need to be able to balance that with jobs that pay enough to sustain a young family. I'm really anxious to see what kind of companies we can bring in here that offer jobs that pay between $40,000 and $70,000 a year. Because our small towns, as you know, you've volunteered for a number of different organizations. But myself being a volunteer on a number of agencies, those numbers are dwindling. And when you try to find the root cause of that, it's because people are working 2, 3, or 4 jobs. They have youngsters at home. So when they finally get out of work, they could be working 12, 14-hour days. When they do get home, they want to try to catch the back end of their child's sports game, mm-hmm. soccer, baseball, or they're trying to coach their kids' games, or they just want to spend time with their spouse. They're not thinking about going to a committee meeting or volunteering at a local food shelter or anything like that. So if we can find jobs that really offer the work-life balance, that's what we're trying to do. And we're trying to get our budget in check, because for far too long, it's very easy to say you can blame it on this administration or that administration. We get it. A lot of people screwed up along the lines. But when are we finally going to own it and make those changes so we can finally have a predictable future? Because as a family who might be wanting to move to Connecticut, or a business who might be considering moving here, those are investors. And you know, as someone who makes small investments on their own, you're only going to invest in something where you can see predictability and mm-hmm. sustainability. And right now, Connecticut has been far too rocky for the last 15, 20 years, 40 years even. And people are hesitant to make that investment. So if we can offer some type of comfort there, knowing that Connecticut has finally turned that tide and we're working towards fiscal sustainability, then those investors, those families, those businesses, they'll want to come back to Connecticut.
Oh, let's hope so. Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to – it really is a great place to live.
It is. My family's five generations here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I take pride in they literally built the northwest corner. Mimini Sand and Gravel, Sagala Sand and Gravel, Sagala mm-hmm. Construction, Sagala Turnkey Housing. My grandfather being a first selectman in North Canaan, my great-grandfather was high sheriff of Litchfield County. So, you know.
High sheriff.
Yeah, when we used to have sheriffs.
Connecticut had, they got rid of that program.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah. That was kind of cool, though. I remember those days.
Certainly. He used to run the Litchfield Jail.
Yeah.
Wow.
What are some of the differences between you and your opponent? You said you had a pretty good debate the other day at the high school. A lot of people showed up, which is always good.
It
means
it was.
People are interested.
Yeah, it was. We were actually supposed to be in room 133 at the high school, which is kind of the stadium style.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the senior homeroom, they call it. But it quickly was overflowing with people, so they moved us to the auditorium. And Maria Horn and I, we've been on the campaign trail together for the last 6-7 months or so, and we've always been very cordial. She's a very nice lady, a great family, 3 great kids, and Tom Quinn is her husband. He's been a figure of this area for quite a while. But I think when people see the contrast, it's there's a lot of state issues and there's a lot of federal issues. And from what I've been hearing from a lot of people is that, you know, Maria is a very nice lady. She's very committed to a lot of issues, but they're more geared towards the federal side. You know, they're always quick to talk about President Trump, talking about immigration, healthcare, which are very critical issues, and we need to be talking about that. But as a state representative, you need to be focusing on the issues that affect the district that you're representing. So in the northwest corner, it's our infrastructure, it's our roads and bridges, it's our small businesses. It's trying to, you know, connect those businesses to 21st century technology. It's protecting our environment and being an advocate for our open spaces, which I've always have been. Protecting our children and making sure they have great educational opportunities in our public schools. We are a very diverse area where we have a large public school section, but we do have a number of private schools, and we need to find that balance. I think for a long time, public school funds have been diverted to magnet and charter schools, and Region 1 has lost out on a lot of those critical monies. So it's wanting to be and continuing to be a cheerleader for the Northwest Corner. Federal issues are certainly at another critical juncture, but you should be running for the position that is going to have the most effect on that. So there's a federal representative, which is Congresswoman Esty, and she's not seeking another term this year. So, you know, some have said perhaps Maria should have considered that position because that seems to be what she's most focused on. But as a state representative, you're more intimately involved in the goings-on in your immediate area.
Wow. So what do you got planned for the rest of the day?
I'm going to the making strides against breast cancer at White Memorial in Litchfield.
Okay. You'll probably hear about that from Willie Hallahan, I'm sure.
Yeah, they asked me to be the MC this year. So,
well, good for you.
I've been studying my script and just trying to rally everybody. And my mother is a breast cancer survivor. Back in 2004, she was first diagnosed. And she is just a... an angel to me, a living angel. She's always been there for me.
Is she going to walk?
She's not going to make it. She has a baby shower to go to for a relative of ours. But she's just a sweetheart, and anytime I can honor her living memory and to honor those who weren't as lucky, it's cancer is it's a tough thing to deal with, and it seems like everyone we know these days has dealt with it or has a family member that is
absolutely
dealing with cancer, and we all need to do our part to rally around it.
Well, they'll raise a ton of money out there. Willie's been telling us about all the different walks out there at the White Memorial. He said
it's
that's
beautiful.
A beautiful area to host something like that. And he says some of the things he's been to are just, it brings tears to your eyes, you know. And I'm sure this would be one of them.
It is. It's very emotional. Avon is the national sponsor for the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. ONG Industries down in Torrington, they're a big sponsor of this local event. So it's, you know, it's everyone. We all come together. The Northwest Corner really rallies around its own when people are in need, and it's such an honor to represent them.
Good. Well, I don't want to tie you up. I certainly appreciate you coming in today, and we wish you well in your bid for re-election. Once again, we encourage everybody to get out and vote on, November 6th?
November 6th, yeah.
November 6th this
coming up,
year.
And, coming up quick.
It is. It's just around
weeks.
The corner.
Two,
3 weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, I want to thank you for all that you do. I know you have been a staple of the tri-state area for a long time, and I can't even imagine what the monetary number is of the money that you've raised over your time in doing this with the Sunday in the Country Food Drive. You've helped a countless number of families and individuals, and I know that you have a special place in their heart and mine as well. So.
Well, thank you very much. And I must say, you're from Canaan. I visited their pantry couple times over the years, and it was a long time before I was able to get up there. And I've got to tell you, the folks that run that pantry, they are awesome.
They are.
It's unbelievable. It's like going into a grocery store. They've got it all organized.
Oh, yes.
It's unbelievable. I said to myself, I thought it was just some kind of shack. Seriously, that's what I pictured in my head. You know, we're sending all these turkeys and food to this shack, mm-hmm. and they just hand it out. Oh, man, I walked in this place. Paul, you wouldn't believe it. Oh, my God. It's phenomenal. And they're so dedicated.
They are.
Those folks are so dedicated there. And in every pantry that we serve, they're just – it's phenomenal. You know, we do this fundraising the entire year now, but not at the level that the workers at these pantries do, giving the food out on a weekly basis. That's just – it's insane for me to think about the hours that must go into that, to call up the Connecticut Food Bank, that we need some more food, or we need help from this one or that one, and coordinate all that and get the mm-hmm. food there and keep the list of the recipients of the folks that do need the food. I mean, it's insane. Mm-hmm. Those people are they're saints, every single one of them.
They are.
And we're so happy to be able to be a little piece of giving them a little bit of a worry-free couple of holidays. So thank you very much for that.
Thank
Brian,
you.
Like
bless.
I said, good luck, and we'll be talking to you after the election, I'm sure.
You got it. Thank
okay.
you, guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's take a short pause here on Hometown Sunday Morning, and then we'll come back with Farmer Paul, who's going to take us through this week's troop tribute, seeing how...
Where's Larry?
Well, he was home putting wood on the fire when I came by, so he's not at the hunting camp.
So he's not at the hunting camp.
He's not
there's
at
still,
the hunting
still
camp.
There's no reason for him not to be here.
I know. All right, we'll be right back.
Here's Brad Paisley.
The baby's born in the middle of the night in the local delivery room. They grab his feet, smack him till he cries. He goes home the next afternoon. Before you know it, he's off to school, and then he graduates in May. He goes out and gets a PhD, and then cures all sorts of things. Wins the Nobel Prize and saves a million different lives. The world's a better place for all he's done. Funny when you think about the reason he's alive. It's all because two people fell in love. The
right now in a picnic shelter down by Cane Creek. You'll find potato salad, hot dogs and baked beans. The whole Wilson family's lined up filling their paper plates. And they've drove or flown in here from 15 different states. Stanley Wilson says that 60 years ago he knew that Miss Emma Tucker was the one. Five generations get together every June, and all because two people fell in love. Yeah, there ain't nothing not affected when two hearts get connected. All that is will be your everyone's. Every single choice we make, every breath we get to take, I recall a young man who was drifting aimlessly, and a young waitress who seemed lonesome as could be. But in a little cafe right off of 14th Avenue, with a whole lot of help from up above, we met and things sure turned around for me. Two people fell in love. Well, baby, there ain't nothing not affected when two hearts get connected. All that is will be your everyone's. I'm glad your dad cannot resist your mama's charms if you exist. All because two people fell in love. You know, to me, because two people fell in love. A baby's born in the middle of the night in the local delivery room. They grab his feet, smack him till he cries. He goes home the next afternoon. Natural.
comes natural.
And Mr. George Strait. A mix of clouds and sun during the morning will give way to cloudy skies this afternoon, a high of 57. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, slight chance of a shower late, a low of 42. Monday, steady light rain in the morning, showers continuing in the afternoon, a high of 61. You're listening to Hometown Sunday Morning on Robinhood Radio. I'm Chad Wildy.
Farmer Paul.
I'm NASCAR Dave.
You know,
rain.
You know what I'm thinking? For some reason, I have this urge to have a lobster now.
You do? Now,
yeah.
Don't say that, because if you don't say nothing.
Nothing?
Anyway, I talked earlier about one of the Town of Northeast board members coming in. It's Chris Kenyon.
Oh, okay.
And I'd be interested to talk to him, too, because he had no political experience, really, I don't think, right? Wasn't he the one that just went in green, like, in the election?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you call it. But anyway, we always start out with a troop tribute, and you still have approximately an hour to go to Sharon Firehouse to the ambulance company's pancake breakfast this morning. It's an all-you-can-eat buffet. It includes pancakes. It includes eggs, bacon, sausage, both patties and links, homemade home fries, coffee and juice, and it's all for a good cause, so check that out. And with that being said, there's also one down in Dover at the J.H. Ketchum Hose Company right there on Route 22. And I see they must be putting up a new firehouse. They've got a humongous building going up there.
Do they?
In Dover, yeah.
Oh, I just went by there yesterday. I didn't see anything.
How could you miss a building that big, Paul?
Well,
it's four times the size of the other
really?
One.
I was looking the other way, I guess.
Yeah, probably.
I did see that big place that burned down. That's a,
oh, yeah.
That's a mess.
All right, so that being said, we always start out with a troop tribute, and Patriot Larry has passed the torch off and instructed Farmer Paul as to what he wanted done today. So
well,
let's see how that makes out.
Yeah, let's see, because I also got a little – is that me or is that you? I don't know what that was.
I don't know what that is.
I also got a little magazine article about this subject. So I should talk into the microphone,
yeah,
right?
That would probably be the best if you did that, I would think.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to talk about, and it's not exactly Larry's recommendation either. I thought I'd, you know.
Oh, you're going to straighten that out?
I'm going to straighten it out. I'm going to make new paths through the forest.
Okay.
The forest of Larry's mind.
So whose idea was this to talk about what you're going to talk about?
Larry wanted me to talk about Alvin York. And people may not know that name, Alvin York, but they may know the name Sergeant York, because he was probably the biggest single war hero that came out of World War I. But what I'm going to talk about is Alvin York and Audie Murphy. Do you know that name?
I don't know any of them.
Audie Murphy was definitely the most decorated soldier out of World War II.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'll talk.
Okay.
I'll tell you a little bit about him. So, Alvin York was one of the most well-known veterans of World War I. Audie Murphy was the most decorated veteran of World War II. Both York and Murphy were awarded the Congressional Medals of Honor. Their backgrounds are somewhat similar, as are their histories of military service. Alvin York was born in a cabin in Tennessee, one of 11 children. The family subsisted on hunting, and Alvin was a noted hunter and marksman. Before the beginning of the war, he had a religious conversion, and he originally registered as a conscientious objector for religious reasons. But upon being drafted, he agreed to serve. His fame really derived from one incident, which occurred late in the war in October 1918, actually, almost exactly 100 years ago. And I'll read from this article that Larry sent on. It happened October 8th, 1918, in the Argonne Forest on the Western Front in France. Alvin York, according to the Medal of Honor citation, he charged with great daring a machine gun nest, which was pouring deadly and incessant fire upon his platoon. In this heroic feat, the machine gun nest was taken, together with four officers and 128 men and several guns. York described the action in his diary after watching his fellow soldiers being shot down. like the long grass before the mowing machine back home. As soon as the machine guns opened fire on me, I began to exchange shots with them. There were over 30 of them in continuous action, and all I could do was touch the Germans off just as fast as I could. All the time I kept yelling at them to come down. I didn't want to kill any more than I had to, but it was they or I, and I was giving them the best I had. What it doesn't say is that he gave a long interview in the 1920s about this, and he said, they asked him, well, how'd you really get the skills to do this? He said, turkey hunting. He said he just thought of them as turkeys that he was killing.
Really?
Yeah. So
30 against one.
There were originally like seven people in his platoon that were
going. Oh, and they all got shot?
And he was left. Shot. He was basically the last one. He captured the 128, and then when they were coming back from that, he picked up another few, another 40 or so. So he almost single-handedly captured a very large number of Germans. But that was the source of his fame. Eventually, like I say, his diary was bought. It was made into a book. And right at the beginning of World War II, as like a patriotic thing, they made a famous movie with Gary Cooper called Sergeant York, which won the Academy Award that year. So that's Alvin York's story. Now, Audie Murphy actually is, in a lot of ways, a much more interesting and character. But he did come from a similar background. He was born in Texas, one of 12 children of a sharecropper. He lied about his age to join the Army right after Pearl Harbor. As a private, he was involved in the Allied landings in Italy, and he and his fellow soldiers ambushed two German machine gun encampments, killing most of the Germans and taking the rest prisoner. For these actions, he was given a promotion to sergeant. For the rest of 1943, he suffered from malaria and was on the disabled list. Then at the beginning of 1944, he returned to active duty and promptly took out a German tank and destroyed the tank with grenades. And he continued to make patrols at the beginning of 1944 against the Germans, even while he was suffering from malaria. And then the rest of 1944, I have to read this because it's really quite a remarkable story that of the service that he provided. So beginning around August 1944, he was in the front in southern France. He wasn't at Normandy. After landing on Yellow Beach near Rematoy, Murphy's platoon was making its way through a vineyard where the men were attacked by German soldiers. He retrieved a machine gun that had been detached from the squad and returned fire at the German soldiers, killing two and wounding one. Two Germans exited a house about 100 yards away and appeared to surrender. When Murphy's best friend responded, they shot and killed him. Murphy advanced alone on the house under direct fire. He killed six, wounded two, and took 11 prisoner. I know. This is just the start. Murphy was with the 1st Battalion, 15th Infantry Regiment, during the 27-28 August offenses at Montemar that secured the area from the Germans. Along with other soldiers who took part in the action, he received the Presidential Unit Citation. Murphy's first Purple Heart was for a heel wound received in a mortar shell blast on the 15th of September 1944 in northeastern France. His first Silver Star came after he killed four and wounded three at a German machine gun position in October at Lomette Quarry in the Clarid River Valley. 3 days later, Murphy crawled alone towards the Germans at Lomette, carrying an SCR 536 radio and directing his men for an hour while the Germans fired directly at him. When his men finally took the hill, 15 Germans had been killed and 35 wounded. Murphy's actions earned him a bronze oak leaf cluster for his Silver Star. He was awarded a battlefield commission to second lieutenant on the 14th of October, which elevated him to platoon leader. While en route to Bouvaliers on the 26th of October, 1944, the 3rd platoon of Company B was attacked by a German sniper group. Murphy captured two before being shot in the hip by a sniper. He returned fire and shot the sniper between the eyes. At the 3rd General Hospital at Aix-en-Provence, the removal of gangrene from the wound caused partial loss of his hip muscle and kept him out of combat until January of 1945. Murphy received his first bronze oak leaf cluster for his Purple Heart for this injury. But he didn't stop. I know, the Colmeyer Pocket, 850 square miles in the Vosges Mountains, had been held by German troops since November 1944. On the 14th of January 1945, now remember, he had just had a hip operation to get rid of gangrene. He rejoined the platoon, which had been moved to the Colmar area in December. He moved with the 3rd Division on the 24th of January to the town of Holzwehr, where they faced a strong German counterattack. He was wounded in both legs, which he received a second bronze oak leaf cluster for his Purple Heart. As the company awaited reinforcements on the 26th of January, he was made commander of Company B. The Germans scored a direct hit on an M-10 tank destroyer, sending it alight, forcing the crew to abandon. Murphy ordered his men to retreat to positions in the woods, remaining alone at his post, shooting his M1 carbine and directing artillery fire via his field radio when the Germans aimed fire directly at his position. Murphy mounted the abandoned burning tank destroyer and began firing its 50 caliber machine gun at the advancing Germans, killing a squad crawling through a ditch towards him. For an hour, Murphy stood on the flaming tank destroyer, returning German fire from foot soldiers and advancing tanks, killing or wounding 50 Germans. He sustained a leg wound during his stand and stopped only after he ran out of ammunition. Then he rejoined his men, disregarding his own injury, and he led them back to repel the Germans. He insisted on remaining with his men while his wounds were treated. For his actions that day, he was awarded the Medal of Honor. The 3rd Infantry Division was awarded the Presidential Unit Citation for its actions at the Colmar Pocket, giving Murphy a bronze oak leaf clusters for this emblem. And then on the 16th of February, he was promoted to First Lieutenant. He received the Legion of Merit from the French government, and his decorations just go on and on and on and on.
Stood on a burning tank for hours?
For an hour, firing alone at Germans coming forth. And they did eventually make a movie of his career as well. Now, after the war, we were talking about PTSD. Well, he suffered from it pretty severely. He had a lot of emotional problems and physical problems. He eventually, though, kind of turned around. He did a lot of TV work. He became an actor, and he did a lot of movie work and TV work in the 50s,
really?
Early 60s. And he died when he was in his 40s in a plane crash in Virginia. So, and I think he's buried at Arlington, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
So, but he was pretty well known in his time.
Sounds it.
I know. I mean,
he's almost a robot.
I know. His story is just incredible. I'm surprised more people don't know who he was, because he really was a very famous soldier from the Second World War.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So, there you go.
Well, it's what veterans do.
That is what veterans do. They fight.
That's why they keep us free. So nice job on that, Paul.
Okay.
Thank you very much. With that, we always play a couple of tunes in honor of our veterans, both past and present, for keeping us safe and free. And this goes out to all of you.
Zach Brown Band, Dress Blues.
What can you see from your window? I can't see anything from mine. Flags on the side of the highway. Scripture on grocery store signs. Maybe 18's too early. Maybe 30 or 40 is too. Did you get your chance to make peace with a man before you sent down his angels for you? Mamas and grandmamas love you, 'cause that's all they know how to do. You never plan on the bombs and the sand overseas. This all would be funny. You came back home in a week. You turned 22 and we'd celebrate you in
in a bar or a tent by the creek. Your baby would just about be here. Your very last tour would be up. But you won't be back there all dressing in black, drinking sweet tea and styrofoam cups. Mamas and grandmamas love you. American boys hate to lose. You never land on the bones in the sand or sleeping in your dress blue.
I'd see, I'd be gone away, but not for too long, not for too long, 'cause I'm coming home. Take away
things I've seen. I'm proud to be this man, the man that you made me. Standing for a cause, the right to be free. I wouldn't trade it for nothing, 'cause I stand for you and me.
Robin Hood Radio is WHDD AM and FM Sharon, WBSL FM Sheffield, and WLHV FM Annandale on Hudson.
The smallest NPR station in the nation.
It's Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio and RobinHoodRadio.com. I'm Chad Wildy.
Farmer Paul.
And I'm NASCAR Dave. Welcome back to this edition of Hometown Sunday Morning. I guess the first thing I got to do is learn to turn the microphones on or the headphones so everybody can hear what they're doing. Well, I said it was going to be a busy show, and want to thank Brian Oler for coming in, running for the 64th District here in Connecticut, which entails all of Region 1, so we wish him well. It sounds like he's been doing some phenomenal stuff for a first-year representative, and that's always good. And November 6th is the election, so we hope everybody gets out and votes. Now joining us in the studio is another first-term politician from the town of Northeast who threw his hat into the ring a year ago when they had the elections, and he and Ralph Fedeli won the election. Chris Cannon, right? Is that how you pronounce your last
Cannon.
Name? Cannon. Thanks for coming in, Chris.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Well,
I told you I'd come back after
you
the
did,
election.
And you know what? You're a man of your word, so that's a good thing. So how has your first year gone? I mean, because you had no political experience, right, if I remember when we first interviewed you?
That's right. That's right. I was a newbie. And it's been a great year. We've had a very good year on the board. You know, it's a split board, but you wouldn't know it if you went to a meeting. It's not a partisan kind of board. And we've got work to do. There's a lot of work to do. So we've got big projects. We've got the highway garage, which we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
And since last year, we have acquired land on Route 22 north of the village. But that's just land, and so we've got all the engineering work to do. We've got to put a storage shed up there, a salt shed, as well as a highway garage. So that'll take a while.
Now, did Ralph or somebody tell us that there was some negotiation between the town and the village as to share some of the facilities there. Is that still in the works or no?
That is still in the works. And to me, that's really one of the very exciting parts of this thing, because people have talked to us a lot and said, why does the village have a snowplow and the town has a snowplow, and why couldn't they just have one snowplow or snowplows that would do things together? And so this is a first step, because we will be putting the village's highway department and the town's highway department together. So they're going to share
space. So that definitely is going to be a go. Good. Yep.
So that's a first step towards working together, is actually to share the same facility.
Phenomenal.
And have lunch together and start, you know.
So you've got the, you do have enough space up there for,
we do have
that
enough,
you purchased?
Yep, we do. We do. And but it's, we have to do all the engineering on it, and you know, there's some trees on the project that have apparently might have a frog under the bark, so we have to wait till the frogs have left. It's amazing. Yeah. You know,
do they leave?
I understand, we can't just chop everything down, but sometimes these regulations get a little crazy.
You don't have to tell me about that. You throw your hands up in the air and you say, where does all this come from?
Yeah, and I think there are three trees.
Yeah, there's hardly any left there. They're all gone. It's pretty much a
cleared
space.
That's going to actually be a pretty nice spot. It's north on 22.
It's north on 22 on the west side of the street.
Yeah.
And it's a good place, because the trucks, get them out of the village, to get those trucks out of the village and the salt shed, which was, 20 feet from the
creek?
It was crazy.
All right, so what are some of the things specifically that you've been working on? Because you said you've been a pretty busy guy on a couple of committees doing a whole bunch of good things.
Well, one of the things that I've been doing, which I actually talked about during the campaign, is grant writing for the town. And we submitted an application for what's called a shared services grant, and that's because of the fact that we would be sharing the space with the village and the town. And I wrote that application, and we got $240,000.
Wow.
As a grant towards the engineering of the project. So that's a really important step forward, because this is an expensive project, this highway garage. There's just no way you can do it on the cheap.
Are there any figures yet, or not really? I mean, projected figures as to what you're looking at, or no?
There are a lot of different figures. Because it's several different buildings. It's a storage shed. We need the storage shed because at the moment we're actually renting space for the grader. State law requires that all of the town's equipment be garaged. You can't just leave it out. So it has to be enclosed in a garage.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been renting space. So one of the things we want to do is not be renting space anymore. Have our own facility. So we're going to build a storage shed first, and then a salt shed for the salt and sand, and get that out of, next to the Weebatuck Creek.
Mm, good.
And then lastly, the actual highway garage, where the trucks will be kept and, the maintenance done and so on and so forth.
Now, is the town and the village going to share the sand and salt too? Is that what the
projected thing is?
Goal of it?
That is the goal of it. So nice. It's great, because this is, people have been saying, why can't, some people would like to see them merged. I don't know that that's ever going to happen, but at least we could do things together and share,
absolutely,
share stuff.
Well, I have two backhoes if you only need one. I mean,
yeah,
seriously,
exactly.
I mean, that just makes sense. So $240,000 grant.
Yep.
That's phenomenal. What went into the grant writing, if you don't mind me asking? Is there a lot of...
These grant applications are complicated, and they ask the same question about 10 different ways. And you have to read it, and and they're not impossible, but they take a lot of time, and you need a lot of information to pull together. We've also applied for a Climate Smart grant to do an analysis of all of the bridges and culverts in the town. And this is to make sure that we're prepared for, the effects of climate change, such as flooding heavy, heavy rains in someone, which we've seen.
Like we've had for the last month and a half.
Exactly. Exactly. And that grant would enable us to look at every single culvert and drain that we have and see if they're the right size, if they're going to be able to handle increased water flow. We've been dealing with the one on Mill Road, which floods
all the time.
And we were going to have fixed that drain. That was a big project. We have the money for it, but we had to be out of there by a certain time because of some environmental regulation, which says that you can't be doing this work after
a certain time.
No, after a certain time. So now it's going to be next summer.
Yeah.
And all this rain and flooding made it really
still happen
because you have to rip out that culvert. You have to put in pumps and pump all that water over the road while you're fixing the original one. So it's all this stuff gets much more complicated than people think.
I know. It's not like you can just go in there, dig it up, and make it bigger and better.
Yeah.
It's just a whole rigmarole. Now, the other thing you said, so how much would that grant be for? Is there a dollar figure on that you're looking for?
The Climate Smart one, that was a grant for, I think, about $50,000 that we were looking for that one. We'll find out at the end of the year whether we've gotten that one or not. But we did put the application in, and we're going to try and do a lot more grant writing because there are grants out there.
That was my next question. It seems like you always hear different folks, different groups saying that there is grant money available if you want to apply for it for a multitude of different things. I mean, even there's food grants and for pantries and so forth. But you have to be able to do that. That's why I asked you how hard it was to actually write a grant, because you want to be accepted for sure.
Right.
You know, that's the key to it.
And there's kind of a language to grants, you know, that they're looking for and buzzwords and so on and so forth. And so a lot of that is learning that. And when you're dealing with engineering stuff, you know, you also need sometimes an engineer to look at it because it's technical.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of grants out there, and we should be going for them.
Absolutely. That's a good thing.
Yeah. The village has been doing it, and now we're doing more of that.
Good.
Well, we got a grant actually the village here. I'm not on the village board, as you know, but the village got a grant for the composting toilet.
What's that?
I knew you wanted to hear about it.
The composting toilet.
Paul.
Oh.
So you were on that committee, correct?
I was on that committee, and I worked with Steve Waite and Dave Sherman, and they were both village trustees at that time. And we did get a grant, a community block grant from the county to build that, and it's a very nice facility, and it is there. It's open.
It's open.
It's right just south of the schoolhouse on the rail trail.
I do have to look at it.
Oh, it's definitely.
It
when I saw the
very
building.
Very nice facility.
I drove over there. I didn't, you know, it was locked up, but I drove over just to look at the building. And, it, you know, we tease Ralph when he comes in because we always say that was his idea and this and that. We blow his head up. But to make a long story short, that really is an asset to the whole community at large. I mean, anybody that uses the rail trail, and you know how many people use the rail trail, or visitors.
Or just visitors walking up and down Main Street.
If you look at Main Street on any weekend, it's mobbed.
Yep.
And it's perfect.
Yep. It's very, very accessible. And for a lot of the merchants that would have people coming in to use their restroom, this is now an alternative. They can say right down there is a nice
public facility. Toilet,
so it's good.
Wow. So that's
that was another grant.
That was another grant, and there was no taxpayer money.
A very small amount from the village, relatively small amount.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
Took a while, but like you say, all the hoops you got to go through, sometimes
I'd
that's
say it
what
was
it
at
takes.
Least 3 years, that project. It's one of the things that I've learned about this, you know, this public service is you have to have a huge amount of patience.
Yeah, hurry up and wait.
Yes,
right?
A lot of that.
So what are some of the other things on the horizon, do you think?
Well,
I know the town garage is number one, but I mean, what are some of the other things we're looking at?
That is number one. We actually just passed a solar law because up till now there was no real regulation. People could put in a solar field right next to their neighbor, and you know, there were no regulations about it. There wasn't any consideration of how close you could be to, you know, your neighbor's property or to the road, because they are an important way of getting energy without, you know, using fossil fuels. But they're not everybody's idea of what they want to have next to them, because they are bright and shiny and
ugly.
Then pretty ugly.
Well, they are ugly. I mean, they do a great job, but they're ugly.
They're ugly. anyway, that was a lot of work went into that, and I think it's considered now, you know, pretty much of a model.
Good
regulation and solar law. It's budget time, so now the next, you know, couple of months will be spent working out the budget. I'm not on the budget committee, but I'm sure we'll all be seeing the budget as it appears.
Now, you were talking, we were talking a little bit off the air about the budget process, and I know there's been some talk in the papers about the ambulance services. Their services seem to go up on a yearly basis.
They've gone up a great deal.
It really becomes a quagmire for a small town to wrangle.
It's very difficult because there's not a lot of usage of it. I mean, the number of calls per day is very, very small around here, but you have to have it, and there have to be people on duty at all times of day and night.
24/7.
There's an expense that you just can't get around. And it is a hard thing. It's a very expensive thing. And it's one of the things that we're seeing. Well, a thing that we're also seeing is the, you know, decline in people who've got the qualifications to man, you know, the town's or the fire district's ambulance. There are just fewer people who are able to do that, who have the time to do it. So that's why we've had to go to this, you know, Northern Dutchess Paramedics.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't very many companies like them that are offering their services. So it's not like there are 10 different companies that can be
begging, you know, for your business,
you know, bidding against each other to do this. So we are looking at ways to combine maybe between some of the different towns. So there's been a study that has just been done with Northeast and the village of Millerton and Amenia and the town of Dover, all to see whether there's a way that we can share some kind of service. and bring the cost down a little bit.
Well, you have to work on it. I thought at one time, wasn't Mark Molinaro talking about that as a countywide to try to coordinate some kind of shared services like that? Didn't he have a plan implemented to try to make those things happen?
He has talked about that, and that this grant that was, and this was again another grant, to do the study of Eastern Dutchess was, I think, a product of his initiative. But, you know, there's such a big difference between us out here in Eastern Dutchess and over in the western part, you know, nearer the river.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you got Poughkeepsie and Beacon and,
you know, Hyde Park, Wappingers.
All up and down through there. There's thousands of people out there.
Yeah. So
hundreds of thousands.
It's a lot easier for them to deal with that. And then, you know, we're over in Eastern Dutchess.
Nowhere.
Which is
we're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, far away land.
Don't you wish sometimes you could just swear?
No, not really.
Out in the woods.
I feel like my vocabulary is enough that I don't.
Out in the woods. Well, so that would be, it's at least worth looking into for sure, Chris.
Speaking of, you know, this Eastern Dutchess thing, I went last week. I went to Poughkeepsie and addressed the county legislature on the extension of the rail trail, because, as you know, the rail trail just stops in Milton.
Yeah,
they've had they've had the land going north for a long time, and I actually found a press release from Bill Steinhaus, who was the former county executive.
Yeah.
Dated 2005,
yep.
Announcing the final phase.
Final phase.
And I took that there, and I said, this is 2005. We've been waiting since 2005 to get the rail trail finished going north. And now it's supposed to be started next year. And they did vote on something when I was there.
Oh, good. So was it a positive vote?
It was a positive vote.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it was a bonus.
Yes, though, environmental, I mean, That does go through a ton of wetlands.
It does go through a ton of wetlands. And so they've, you know, they've had all the bog turtle things and all the other things that they have to do. And they're going to, of course, these were not flooded when the railroad went up there.
But it sat there
and there's been flooding. So I think what they're going to do is they're actually going to have some raised walkways that are going
to
go over.
A few
places.
That's all right.
But I think a lot of the engineering's been done. I think it's actually being put out to bid now at this point.
Good.
And they own the lands that they can do it all.
They have an
issue, I know, because that land had been sold off when the railroad went bye-bye.
Yeah. No, they've put together that whole tract. And it's going to be great because the rail trail is one of the drivers of economic activity in Millerton.
Oh, it absolutely is.
Yeah.
And
so
even
it's a big one.
Yeah. I mean, it starts right from the train station, actually.
Yeah.
You see traffic all the time from the train station on up through.
Yeah. So we definitely want to take that and take advantage of it.
Absolutely. Well, that would be great I've always said that. If you can get that northern part done.
We're going to get it done. I say it's not so much the town of Northeast anymore. It's the county and the state.
But they'll get it done.
Because they have come further south, haven't they? I mean, it's up to where in Copaig or Hillsdale? Copaig.
Yeah, I think they're all
There's bits and pieces further north. Yeah. And eventually the idea is that it's going to go all the way to Chatham.
That'd really be neat, like the train.
Not sure that'll be in my lifetime, but
well,
that it's a nice idea.
It is a beautiful idea.
Yeah.
Well, just the one section from here to Copaig is going to be a great addition. It's beautiful countryside up through there, you know, for
land.
People to walk and ride their bikes and do whatever, you know. It's just so you got a full plate, Chris.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on, and we have our board meetings every second Thursday of every month. So you know, people should come and observe and learn more about the town.
Yeah, and there's always a comment period, or if you have a question, if you're a taxpayer,
there is. Yeah.
More people need to do that. Just take a little time and go down and listen. You'd be amazed. I've always been amazed when I go to these meetings and they start going over some of the expenditures from the previous month. And, you know, when you start hearing what has been spent, you get to know where your tax money's going, but you say to yourself, wow, who would ever have thought that number would be there or, you know, whatever. It truly is. It's eye-opening. And to see how the boards, all the different boards made up of all different volunteers, pull this all together, it really is. I give you folks a lot of credit to do that, and I'm glad to hear that you guys, the Northeast Board, is still working together to try to make things happen.
Yeah, I think it's working really well.
Yeah, I think nationally, I've said this before to everybody. Nationally, they should come and watch what we do in our areas, both on the Connecticut side and the New York State side, because we do work together. We all live together, just like they all live together in Washington.
Yeah.
There's no reason that can't happen.
Yeah. Well, this is what I really like about small town life, is that you have to look people in the eye and come to make a decision that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so you just can't get away with some of the nonsense
that
you hear nationally.
Well, I appreciate you coming in. Anything else you want to touch on, or?
Well, I'm happy to come back.
Are you gonna go for a second term? You think?
That's a long way away.
Well, it's 3 years,
I just got a 4-year term.
I know you got three more years to think about it, but you seem very excited about your first year, though.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. I really, you know, it's a lot of work, but I really enjoy it, and I see the result. You know, things do get done if you're patient.
Good.
Well, anyway, it's great to see you.
All right, nice to see you, and thank you so much for coming in.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a short pause here, and then we've got Kyle Barton coming in next up to talk about a pretty prestigious award right here in Columbia County. I'm looking forward to this interview. We'll be right back after this short pause.
Here after work, every Friday night. Living right above me, pretty as a picture on the wall. Once I helped her with a bag of groceries, we met a time or two out in the hall. She told me somebody hurt her feelings, the hurt that's in her eyes is plain to see. Slowly she's been wearing out my ceiling, walking the floor over me. Every night I hear her crying, crying over some old memory. The little of my heart is down here dying, cause she's walking the floor. Followed every footstep, counting long enough to fall asleep. I had the sweetest dream last night, was I dreamt she was walking the floor over me. Every night I hear her crying, crying over some old memory. A little of my heart.
Alan Jackson with the Wreckers before that. You're listening to Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio. I'm Chad Wildy.
Farmer Paul.
Hey, I'm NASCAR Dave. Welcome back to this edition of Hometown Sunday Morning. Paul, behave yourself, please.
Okay.
Just because you have some manners for once in your life.
Oh, all right.
Just once in your life, that's all I'm asking.
I thought you'd introduce the young lady.
She doesn't. She wants to stay incognito.
Oh, I see.
What
okay.
don't you understand
oh, I did
about
understand
that?
That. Okay.
Anyway, it's been kind of a whirlwind day here at Hometown Sunday Morning, and we're glad everybody's coming in. I want to thank both Brian Oler and Chris Cannon for coming in and talking to us a little bit about what's going on in the political world. We're going to switch gears here now, and then after this interview, we'll play a tune, and then we can get all our regulars in. Billy Anstett wants to call about a food drive event coming up. I know Willie Hallahan has probably eaten the cord off the phone by now. And we also have a couple of interviews that our roving reporter Gene Salader did this past week. So we still have a busy hour and a half to go, folks. But right now, it's my pleasure to introduce a young man named Kyle Barton, and I believe he's from Ankrum.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to Hometown Sunday Morning.
Thank you.
Your lovely girlfriend, Francisca, right? Did I say that right?
Francesca.
Francesca. See? She can speak. See?
Yeah, she's just,
that's
perfectly
how it's perfect. So, Kyle, it was brought to my attention this past week that you had quite a season with showing cattle.
Yeah,
all
we had
told.
A pretty overwhelming year, that's for sure.
Can we hear him all right, Chad? Or does he need to get closer? Get a little closer if you can. So why don't we start the whole, let's start this whole thing. How old are you?
I'm 20.
You're 20. So how long have you been showing cows?
Probably since I was like 6 years old.
And how did you get started doing that?
My grandfather bought me a Jersey calf at who is now his business partner's dispersal sale, which was Oblong Valley, which is Beneke's right on 22 in Millerton.
And so you started that young. Now, do you belong to like the Eastern New York Holsteins Club? Or
yeah, I do.
Now, did you do FFA in high school or any of that?
I didn't do FFA in high school. I was pretty busy doing the shows and traveling around and stuff, and I wasn't home enough to really be involved in it too much.
So you learned by on the fly
how to show
and so forth?
Yeah, I learned from my grandfather, from my mom, my brother, kind of just doing it. Not had a lot of really good guidance on my way.
So your grandfather's name is what?
Ken Main.
Ken Main, okay.
Yep.
So let's talk about, I don't know where we should start. I guess let's start right at the top and then how we got to the top. So what breed of cow do you show?
Well, at World Dairy Expo, I showed Brown Swiss, but I also have black and white Holsteins and red and white Holsteins.
So you're a multiple showman.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah.
Now, do you clip your own cows and all that?
Yep.
You do it all yourself?
Do it all, yeah.
So at 20 years old, is this your last year in the junior series? Is that how that works?
I have one more year because it's 21 as of January 1st. So I turned 21 in April, so I still have next year to show
so
in the
you
junior
can do
show.
Now, you can also show in the senior show?
Yep. Yeah, anybody can show in the
anybody
open
can show,
show
in
yeah.
the open show.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about this Brown Swiss cow that is so tremendous. Let's talk about how old she is, where she came from, how you acquired her, or whatever.
Okay.
I think if I read the newspaper right, the farm bred this cow.
Yeah, she was born on the farm. My grandfather bought her mother as a baby calf from Gordon DeMay, and I showed the baby calf. I showed her mother as she was a calf and as a heifer, and she did really well. She was third. Her mother was third at World Dairy Expo as a winter calf, and I want to say she was third as a winter yearling as well. And then she ended up falling down and getting hurt, but she was fine, but she couldn't walk real well, so she couldn't show anymore. Then I showed Delilah.
Now, Delilah's her offspring?
Yeah, Delilah's her offspring, and I showed her from since she was a winter calf all the way up until now.
You've always been the only one showing this cow.
Yeah, she went to Kentucky once, and I didn't go, and somebody else showed her. But other than that, that's the only show that
did she win
I didn't
in Kentucky
show.
With a different show person?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Sounds like the cow can do it all by itself,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, she wow. pretty much she shows herself off, that's for sure.
Holy mackerel. So you've taken care of this cow the whole time?
Well, I can't take credit for it. She's lived on the farm since she was a calf, but I'm not at the farm a lot because, I mean, I was going to school and now I have a full-time job off the farm, so I can't take credit for her development, but I'm lucky enough to be able to show her and have fun with her at the shows and all that.
All right, so let's go through the show circuit this year. Where have you shown? Where did the show start for you? Now she's a brown Swiss.
She's a brown Swiss,
right,
yeah.
So where did you start?
The first show that she went to was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is All American Dairy Show. And that was 2 weeks before World Dairy Expo. And she was grand and supreme there as well.
Hmm. All right, so grand champion means to me that you win your class.
Grand champion is
the best of the brown Swiss.
Best of the brown Swiss show, yes. And then there's seven other breeds that they all get grand champions, and then supreme is the overall champion out of them seven breeds.
So it's like watching a Westminster Kennel Club show. You win your breed, and then they put the winners of all the breeds,
yep.
And then and she was picked supreme in Harrisburg.
That's right.
Wow.
How many different cows are entered in this?
There's seven different breeds.
But amongst the breeds, though.
Oh, I at World Dairy Expo there was 2,300.
Wow.
And that's some sense.
2,300.
I think at Harrisburg there was around like 1,500, but
oh
I'm not sure on that number for Harrisburg.
Well, still, we're holding you right to it.
Yeah,
if there's 2,301, you're not ever going to be on the radio again, but I'm telling you, you're done. So a lot of cow.
Yeah, a lot of cows.
All right, so you went from Harrisburg directly to World Dairy?
The guys on the crew did. I came home Friday night and worked in the barbershop Saturday. And then packed up my stuff and went – or no, that was – yeah, packed up my stuff and went to – no, that was from the Big E to Harrisburg.
So you went to the Big E too?
Yeah.
And how'd you do at the Big E?
We did really well. They had – so the first part of the week there's just brown Swiss there, and we had, I think, like 15 or so. And then a couple of days after they get there – there was like another 15 Holsteins came in because they show later in the week. So mm-hmm. The brown Swiss left halfway through. Then we had Holsteins the rest of the week. So then we went straight from the Big E to Harrisburg. And then from Harrisburg, we came home for a few days and then went to Madison.
Mm. All right, so let's talk about Madison. How many times have you shown at Madison?
I want to say the first time I ever showed at Madison was when Delilah's mother was a calf. I believe that's the first time I showed. I think it was in 2010 or 2011.
And how old were you then?
I would have been 11, 12 years old.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky, that's for sure.
So let's talk about Delilah this year at Madison. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty overwhelming, I guess, is the best word that I can use to describe it. You know, it's not something that you think will ever happen. Obviously, you strive for it, but it's not something that you wake up and think is going to be your day or be what's going to happen to you. It's definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
So she won her class.
Won her class.
And how many brown Swiss was she up against?
In her class, there was maybe like 20, 25. Then in the whole show, I think there was like 300. And then overall, there was 2,300 cows right. in the whole show.
So she won her class, and now you go on to for all the breeds. And she came away the winner there, too,
yep.
The supreme grand champion.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Of the open and the junior show.
Now, let me ask you this. How many times has that happened, do you know, with the brown Swiss? Because that's not a dominant breed, is it? You always hear about you know, the black and whites and other different breeds. But brown Swiss, you don't see a lot of people have brown Swiss cows.
Yeah, I want to say she was the fourth brown Swiss to ever win Supreme Champion there.
Really?
Yeah. Don't quote me on that. But, and I know for a fact it's only the second time that a junior won the junior and the open show Supreme.
So you beat up all of the old boys is what you're saying. You just whooped their butt, didn't you?
I guess so, yeah.
You could say that, right? Well, you should be smiling.
Yeah.
Wow, you did a great job, huh?
Yeah, thank you.
So what do you win if you get that? I mean, it's not a monetary thing. It's just like a – what does the blue ribbon look like? Is it as big as this room or something? Humongous?
Yeah, she got a – there's a couple, like, big blankets, I guess, that – She got hung over her after she won, and there's some chairs that she won. For the junior show, she won a cattle trailer for a year.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So that's pretty awesome. Just got to figure out how to get a home from Wisconsin now.
Send Jimmy out. He knows the way out there now.
Yeah.
That's what he tells me. So you've had a lot of help over the years with that, though. You said, you know, your grandfather and other people have been involved. Tell us a little bit about who's been involved with making that happen for you.
Well, definitely my grandfather and Peter, the two guys who own the farm. They do a tremendous job getting the cows ready, getting them out. My brother, he's been working there since he graduated from Penn State, since May. So he had a lot to do with the cows this year.
Now, is he older than you or younger?
Yeah, no, he's older than me. He's 22.
Okay.
And so he had a lot to do with it. And then Tim Kuhn, he helps us. Well, he's the boss at the show. He takes care of the string. He makes sure everything's going right and keeps everything straight. And he deserves a lot of the credit for getting the cows out as well as they come out for the show. You know, He's one of the best in the business as far as getting them ready and taking care of them at the show. So I've been very fortunate to be able to work with him and learn from him. And it's definitely a humbling experience.
Did he keep Jimmy straight? That's got to be his biggest job.
I don't know. I don't know if you can keep Jimmy straight.
Did you just say that out loud on the radio?
That sounds like throwing someone under a bus.
I would think so, yeah. I don't know if there's any way you could keep him straight. Now, what?
Wow.
I'm going to have to listen to this afternoon. You do understand that, right, Kyle?
Yeah. No, Jimmy's definitely a very important person to have at the show. He makes sure everything is how it's supposed to be when nobody else is there.
And he's fun to be with.
Jimmy,
he doesn't make it like it's a big business type thing.
No, Jimmy is awesome.
It's one thing I like about Cooner and all those folks that, even your grandfather, I've met him two or three times, and Mr. Vail, what they do for the juniors in our area, it's unbelievable. They give kids chances that they absolutely would not have any other time in their life.
That's for sure.
They possibly couldn't do it. And it seems to me that they have as much fun doing that as the young people that they help groom and so forth. Now, in your article, I was reading the experience of showing cattle over the course of your young life has really made you into a well-rounded person with the education and the structure of discipline and so forth.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
I mean, it's just, I feel like it's not really, it either makes you or breaks you in a sense. It definitely teaches you how to stay focused and teaches you work ethic for sure, because I mean if you don't stay persistent with it, obviously it's not going to happen, because it doesn't just do it for itself, you know. And I think it's helped me a lot with communication, like communicating with other people and being able to have like real life conversations rather than just kind of like side talk and stuff like that. Like it makes you, I don't know, I feel like it's taught me to appreciate life itself and like the happiness that things can bring you, rather than just I don't know. I'm just very fortunate to be able to be a part of it, that's for sure.
So what's next for the cow?
Chilling home, eating some nice hay. And
no, but I mean, so will she go back out on a circuit next year, you think?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of time between now and then. It's hard to say, you know, a lot of things could happen. I hope so. I mean, I would say that's the plan right now.
Now, have you kept any of her offspring yourself at the farm?
Yeah, she has some calves at the farm. We actually are selling one the end of October, and a couple have been sold. One got sold in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the sale there, and her March calf got sold at World Dairy Expo. I'm pretty sure she brought $13,250.
Wow. Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a deal.
So this is how I was tutored this morning by Mr. Perotti. This was his message to me. I'm supposed to ask you about some personal awards that you got above and beyond the Supreme Grand Champion.
Yeah.
Now, I may have said that terminology wrong. I'm not sure. He had a whole spiel for me, but there's no way in hell I was going to remember that spiel. So tell me about those personal awards.
Well,
he was quite impressed with them, to be honest with you.
At the Big E, I received it's called the Cane. It's like a herdsmanship award. It's meant to go to somebody who sticks out in the barn as far as their work ethic and how much they have improved their skills. And I guess somebody who just stands out, who does a lot and handles things the right way.
Good,
I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely a very awesome thing to get and rewarding thing to get, but I don't like to be, you know, I don't like to think that I'm better than the next person or anything like that. You know, I just do what I think needs to be done, and I don't know. It's awesome to receive stuff like that, but
that's beautiful. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was very, very nice to see, nice to get.
He said there was two awards, though. What's the other one?
And then at Madison, I received the Merle Howard Award, which is, represented to somebody, a youth that's, like, outstanding youth, somebody who just sticks out in the mind of the other people who have received the award. There's, I think, 11 people who have received it in the prior years.
Wow.
And so they recommend people to the 4 or 5 people who are on the board of the award, and then they kind of talk to the people who work with them and stuff and decide whether or not they're the best candidate for that award.
Wow. And that was at the World Dairy Expo.
Yeah.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's big.
Yeah, it was unbelievable experience this year. I've definitely peaked as far as...
We can't say
as
that
well
because you've got to keep going now. Keep going.
It's going to be hard to maintain, though.
Now, did somebody say you were taking Delilah to Canada? Is there a show in Canada, too?
Not that I know of.
No? I didn't think so either. I don't know if you told me that.
No, there used to be a Brown Swiss show in Toronto for the Royal Winter Fair, but...
Yeah.
I don't believe that they have a Brown Swiss show there anymore because their numbers were down.
Yeah. So now, to get off of the cow thing, we've run that. Your head's big enough now. We don't need to have you get your head any bigger here.
Thank you.
Once again, congratulations on that. That's phenomenal.
Thank you.
That's totally awesome. That really is. So you said you had a full-time job. Now, you've got to tell us about that because it has nothing to do with cattle. Nothing, zero.
Well,
it does. You got to clip.
You got to clip
the cows. All right. So tell us about that. How you get involved with this now?
Well, I'm a full-time barber. I work at the Pine Plains Barber, at the Pine Plains Barbershop in Pine Plains. I used to do a lot of cattle fitting, giving cows haircuts. during the summer and stuff, I'd go to different county fairs and stuff and help people out. And I got sick of, I don't know if I should say sick of it, but traveling wasn't my forte, I guess. And I decided maybe I should look into barbering and checked it out and went to school in Manhattan, and then
really,
yeah, I ended up really liking it. And
that one on 29th Street, there's a big barber school on 29th Street. I know.
I think it was 39th and 5th.
Okay. Oh, I think I know where that is.
American Barber Institute. Yeah. And
talk a little bit about that barbershop, though, because that's really a unique kind of barbershop there.
Yeah.
No, it's right on,
it's on the corner there.
It's on 82. It's right at the stoplight.
Yeah, it's right at the stoplight, right across from the bank.
Right.
I mean, there's no other barbershop like it. It's,
no.
My boss does an awesome job with it. He collects barber antiques, and the place is just plastered with barber antiques, like rare barber antiques, and he does an awesome job marketing it. We're always busy.
It's a walk-in.
Yeah, always.
It's two of you?
Yep, just two of us.
And there's enough business to keep two barbers busy.
Yeah, we could almost use a third barber some days.
Really?
Yeah, we're really busy.
Every time I've been there, I've had to wait at least an hour.
Yeah, you said you go there. Really?
Yeah, I mean, you can get, it's all very traditional haircuts. You can get hot towel shaves with a straight razor. Everybody gets a straight razor with the hot lather on their neck and sideburns. And
sounds just like Jamaica. That's what I get when I go to Jamaica.
There you go.
They tell me I'm crazy. But they don't use a hot towel. They just take the blade and start doing this. They put some kind of stuff on the blade, though. It looks like some kind of clear soap. I don't know what it is. But
I think it's a low juice.
I'll tell you what, it's crazy. I mean, they go all the way around your hairline with the razor and all that. It's pretty neat. So you do all that?
Yeah.
Wow.
He does a lot of different styles too of
I would imagine, right?
Yeah, we do. Anything you want.
Different things like a pompadour and things like that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've wanted all right, so now we got to get personal. How did you meet your other half here, Francesca?
Well, I was actually fortunate enough to go to school with her. So we met in high school.
Oh, you met in high school?
Yeah.
Now, where did you go to high school?
Pine Plains.
Pine Plains High School.
Yep. Both went to Pine Plains. I want to say we met junior year. Started hanging out.
Nice.
I decided it was a good idea to maybe ask her to be my girlfriend, and she hasn't left me yet.
Good for you. Wow. So, Francesco, what's your plan after school? I mean, you got two more years, right? And then do you have to go further with that education or no?
Well, I'd like to get my master's degree after my bachelor's.
You would?
Yeah.
And so you went to Pine Plains High School too? So you're a local girl?
Yep. Stanfordville.
Stanfordville? Okay. I didn't know Stanfordville went to Pine Plains. I don't know the district, so
yeah,
there.
I think
you know
Pine
I'm
Plains covers like seven or eight different
towns.
Yeah,
it probably does, but you never think about that. You think Stanfordville's way on the other side. They will go to Arlington or something. But would you stay at Marist for your master's, or would you be going somewhere else, you think?
They actually have a five-year program now where you could get your master's in 5 years, which is nice.
And then what would you be working at, though? I mean, would you be like in a hospital situation, or would you – what would –
I'm going to go into teaching.
You're going to teach?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Good for you. Now, what would that be, like at a high school level or
I'm K college? Through 6.
K through 6.
So I'll be with kids.
Phew. Good for you.
I'll be a good person for her to learn on because
acts like a child.
I didn't really want to say that, Kyle, but now that you brought it up, I see she's got her hands full already. I can see that.
You know, if you have a child, maybe you should name it Delilah.
Delilah, yeah, you better after all that.
All that work.
Wow, that's good. So you two really have a really good base in career model that you'd like to take and go forward with. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it's as always, it's been a pleasure. Did we miss anything? Because I don't want Jim yelling at me.
I don't think so. I think Jimmy should
you
be.
You sure?
Should be content.
Well, he's not going to be content because you said right live on the air, quote, there's nobody that can keep him in check, basically is what you said. So
he takes care of himself.
We're all, yeah, okay.
Yeah, like all of us.
Yeah, we're done. Well, it's been a pleasure, and congratulations. That's awesome achievement, and I just don't know what else to say. I'm taken aback, and I, when you think about going to a to the World Dairy Expo where there's cows from all over the world and live in Ankerman, Copec, New York, you know, little hick towns.
Yeah.
That is totally awesome.
Yeah, it's
good job.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable is right. Your grandfather should be very proud.
Yeah. It's I don't have words for it. It's been an unbelievable experience. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to be involved in it.
No, sounds like you've worked hard at it, though.
We try.
A great picture in that Farm Shine, the one I saw where you put your head on the cow's head and you're petting its nose. That's really a sweet picture, really. Is.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
Yeah, she looks like she could almost be a ham bone. You know, she's smiling. It looks like she's smiling, you know. So have you been to any of the cow shows, Francesca?
I have, but I didn't make it to Wisconsin just because I'm in college.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's other priorities, but...
I was watching, though.
Yeah, oh, you did?
Yeah, of course.
Oh. How come Jimmy didn't tell me I could watch live?
I don't know.
See, he's a failure.
Oh, boy.
He could have told me I could have watched it live.
Yeah.
He didn't even tell me this...
He's got a bone to pick with you. Now you've got a bone to pick
with
him.
Yeah, well, he could have told me that, hey, there's a brown Swiss that we're taking care of, Cooner and I, that might do pretty well. He didn't even tell me that.
He didn't tell you about that cow at the Tonight Show either, if I remember correctly.
No, that had to be top secret. Because he was with, what, Jimmy Fallon and somebody else, right?
Yeah, Blake Shelton.
Blake Shelton, that's right. Yeah,
see that? He knows.
He knows all about
Did
it.
Did you go to that, too?
No, they asked me, but I couldn't make it. I think I was either just starting a new job or going to school or something.
Wow, we got to get rid of these schools. You kids got much more important things to do than go to school. Well, keep up the good work, kids, and it was a pleasure to meet both of you. And Francesca, I'm glad you came in and talked to us a little bit. See, it wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Good luck in the future.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Hometown Sunday Morning here. We'll be right back after the top of the hour and go on with the locals segment, I guess. Much more local.
Here's Blake.
What?
This is a song about best friends. John Roy was a boy I knew since he was three and I was two. Grew up two little houses down from me. The only two bad apples on our family tree. Kinda ripened and rotted in our puberty. Two kindred spirits bound by destiny. Well, now I was smart, but I lacked ambition. Johnny was wild with no inhibition. Was about like mixing fire and gasoline. And he'd say, hey, Romeo, let's go down to Mexico. Senoritas, drink ourselves silly. Show the Mexican girls a couple real hillbillies. Got a pocket full of cash in that old Ford truck. Fuzzy cat hanging from the mirror for luck. Said, don't you know all those little brown-eyed girls won't play boys of the southwestern world. La 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 la. Long around our 18th year, we found two airplane tickets the hell out of here. Got scholarships to some small town school in Texas. We learned to drink sangrias till the dawn's early light. Eat eggs, rancheros, and throw up all night. And tell those daddy's girls we were majoring in a rodeo. Oh, but my favorite memory of school that fall was the night John Roy came running down the hall wearing nothing but cowboy boots and a big sombrero. And he was yelling, hey, Romeo, let's go down to Mexico. Chase senoritas, drink ourselves silly. Show them Mexican girls a couple real hillbillies. Got a pocket full of cash in that old Ford truck. Fuzzy cat hanging from the mirror for luck. Said, don't you know all those little brown-eyed girls won't play boys up.
southwestern world. La 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 la. And I say we had a little change in plans, like when Paul McCartney got busted in Japan. And I say we got waylaid when we set foot on Mexican soil. See the border guard with a Fu Manchu mustache kind of stumbled on John's pocket full of American cash. He said, doing a little funny business in Mexico, amigo. But all I could think about was saving my own tail when he mentioned 10 years in a Mexican jail. So I pointed to John Roy and said, it's all his, now please let me go. I mean, it was your idea, genius. I was just laying there in bed when you said, hey, Romeo, let's go down to Mexico. Chase senoritas, drink ourselves silly. Show them Mexican girls a couple real hillbillies. Got a pocket full of cash in that old Ford truck. Plus a cat hanging from the mirror. Southwestern world, now we're still best friends.
Robin Hood Radio is WHDD AM and FM Sharon, WBSL FM Sheffield, and WLHV FM Annandale on Hudson.
The smallest NPR station in the nation.
Over at the Canaan VFW 104 South 104 Route 7 South, they're having a Falls Crafts Fair being held by the Auxiliary. This is happening Saturday, October 20th from 10 to 3. Food for purchase throughout the day, all independent crafters, no commercial vendors. There's going to be something for everyone. Raffles, kids are certainly welcome. The veterans of Foreign Wars Auxiliary supporting local veterans and families. Also, pumpkin decorating at the Canaan VFW coming up Saturday, October 27th. This is happening from 9 a.m. to noon. Again, 104 South Canaan Road, Route 7. Outside, under the pavilion, all activities are free. Children's pumpkin decorating, face painting, cupcake decorating, and many other activities. Wear a costume and get a prize. You're listening to Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio. I'm Chad Wildey.
Did you say wear a costume and get a prize?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah.
Paul, Farmer Paul.
I'm NASCAR Dave. Good morning. You're live on Hometown Sunday Morning.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm good, Billy. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
So you're
not raining.
Yeah, it's going to rain tomorrow, though.
Oh.
That's what they were saying in here this morning. I couldn't believe it. I said, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, it's been that kind of late summer and fall.
All right, so you want to talk about some food drive stuff?
Well, a couple of things. First off, the chicken cook-off, which is coming up on the 27th of October. The tickets are $10, and the pickup is from 2 to 4. We have a contact number if anyone out there is interested in getting in the cook-off. It's 845-233-0928. It's Donnie Nijak's number, and he's in charge of getting the teams together. And I'm not sure how many teams there are at the moment, but anyone is welcome. So more teams, the better. You can contact him and get the details.
Cool. So now this is it's a takeout-only event, right?
Takeout-only. 2 to 4.
$10, but you're going to get a full meal. What's coming with the half a chicken?
I believe it's going to be a pasta salad and beans. As far as I know, not sure what else is on the menu at the moment, but thus far that's it. If you're interested in getting in to compete, typically the people cooking and so forth get together around 9 o'clock. I'm not sure if there's any pit area available still. You can bring your own grill, but again, call Donnie. He'll give you the details and let you know how it goes.
Cool. So, and that's a major fundraiser, one of the major ones for the food drive still. So, and you judge, I think the chicken's being judged this year?
It is. I'm not privy to the judges as of yet, but I'm sure that that'll come together. I think next week is going to be the whole setup for our final meeting and making sure that everybody's on board. And we'll go from there.
Well, sounds like a plan, and I'm sure you'll be calling again next week. But where can we buy tickets, Billy?
I'm sorry, what?
Where can you buy tickets if you want to get tickets?
There are tickets at the Legion. I have tickets. Don Nijak, Jen Nijak. I know Randy has some tickets. I thought you had tickets, but if you don't, we can get you some.
I don't, but I'll tell you who we got to get tickets to is that gentleman that sold so many for the other thing that we did from the firehouse.
Oh, okay.
You know who I mean. I can't remember his name.
Well, we better find that out.
His name?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's right at the tip of my tongue, too, Billy. That drives me crazy.
Well,
I'll think of it.
We'll find it out, and maybe next week, if you're going to be around at the show, doing the show, maybe Jen and Donnie can come in and talk it over a little more.
Absolutely. We'll set that up with them because I'm going to be here next week. So now you guys, you've had quite a busy week. You were in two spots last week. How did that go over?
Well, I know at Daisy Hill it went over really well. I wasn't at the other spot, Swasser, but they told me everything went well. So it was a good day all in all, and everybody seemed to do well and have a good time.
All right. So the goal, I see you've got the signboards up.
You guys
have set a goal of 40,000 to help feed the needy this year, and it's looking like. The pantries that have contacted so far looks like it's going to be similar to what it was the previous year, the need.
Yeah, I think that in regards to that, we're going to try to bolster as much as we can. And however that turns out, it turns out, but we'll be able to help the pantries the same as we've been doing for the last 26. So, we're happy for that.
Well, that's a good thing. And you know what? Talking about that chicken cook-off, I don't know if you realize this, but do you know that Ankrum Fire Company in the Hillsdale market have donated the chicken for the entire number of years we've been doing that chicken cook-off?
I didn't realize that. I know that they've been on board for a long time.
From day one, they've donated the chicken. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's been great. They always come through for us, along with the Hillsdale Market. So we got to thank them.
All right. Well, I'm gonna I'll buy a couple of tickets for you to give away. You're gonna have to get used to running dinners around, just so you know, Bill. That's the other thing I haven't told you yet.
Well, there's a lot of things I have to get used to. But I do have a van.
Yeah, I know.
So.
You can load it right up.
Can load it right up and call me Van Gogh.
Well, hey, that was good, Bill.
I
have to tell you, the folks that got those dinners last night from Post 126 here in Sharon, That roast beef dinner was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yep, absolutely. I picked up a couple myself. They're very good.
Yeah, very good. And the food drive gave away, what, 8 dinners, I think we had purchased to give to folks that we knew that needed them, and that they were very gracious to accept them, gave them a full meal for last night. So, and I must say, I had some of the roast beef last night from there, and they actually, that was one of the better ones that they've ever put out. And I understand Ray Achard told me that next month in November they're going to do the same thing all over again with roast beef. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. I think we may still be here for that. Hopefully we are, but I'll tell you what, that roast beef was to die for last night.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get back to Daisy Hill for a moment and thank everyone over there and the staff. They did a fantastic job and gave us a hand to get started, and they were certainly gracious hosts. So thank you, Daisy Hill.
Well, let me tell you what. Those folks, they put that money jar out during the course of the whole season that they're open, and they just they're tireless supporters of the food drive, always have been. And you know, it's so easy just to put a jar out there. You can't imagine how much money we've made over the years with that idea, and they came up with that themselves.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's all part of community and helping out, and this the whole surrounding, all the communities around help us, and they know who they are, and it's good to see that it continues because the need is out there. So thank you, everyone.
All right, Bill. So how you doing with your picks? Because I haven't won this year yet.
I was going to mention that, but I'll let that slide for this week. I'm going to call again next week. We've got a couple other things coming up. The kids are going out on the 10th of November, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit. But we'll contact you next week, and we'll talk about the NASCAR Challenge and how it's hard to believe that we're 31 races already. So
unbelievable. Season's almost over.
Yeah, and I'll calculate all the wins. Especially yours.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lot of calculating. You won't need a calculator to write zero.
Yeah, okay.
Although right, well, I did, I picked a driver. I picked a driver that drives for a team that have won 5 of the last 7 races in today's Talladega race.
Well, that's the end of them then.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
All right.
All right. You have a good day. Thanks.
Yeah. Have a great day. And if you want to help out Sunday in a Country Food Drive, the address is still the same. You can write a tax deductible check to Sunday in a Country Food Drive, P.O. Box 789, Millerton, New York, 12546. Or you can run into Billy Anstead or Pat Dineen or the Nijaks or Randy Christensen. All those tireless volunteers who keep it going, Emilius's, Dave Peterson, all of those folks will gladly accept any kind of donation you want to give them and get it to Billy. Billy's doing a great job keeping, he and his wife Colleen are doing a great job keeping this going forward, and I'm very happy to see that. So that being said, we're going to switch gears now. I'll tell you, do we have Willie on the phone yet?
No, but he has tried to call a couple of times.
All right, so I'm going to tell you what the racing is right this second while he's furiously dialing the telephone to get in. For today, the race is at Talladega. It's a super speedway, 2.66 miles in length. Doesn't tell me who's sponsoring him. Anyway, Kurt Busch is on the pole.
Bulbs.
Followed by Clint Bowyer, Kevin Harvick, Eric Amarola, Chase Elliott, who won last week at Dover, Delaware, so he's already into the next round. Jimmy Johnson is sixth. Alex Bowman is seventh. William Byron is eighth. Kyle Busch is ninth. Denny Hamlin, tenth. Martin Truex outside the bubble on 11th, even though he's in the chase, along with Brad Keselowski, who's in the chase in the number two car. He's starting 18th, and that looks like about it. Oh, no, Kyle Larson way back in the back, 34th, and he's also in the chase. So we've got a listener.
Willie's going to – any second – there he is right there.
Any second?
Yeah.
Is that what he called to tell you, any second? God, why didn't you just keep him on the phone?
This is at 2 p.m. on NBC.
It is on 2 p.m. on NBC if you want to watch the –
It says NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Series 1000bulbs.com. What is that?
I have no idea. Good morning. You're live on Hometown Sunday Morning.
Hey, Dave. It's Willie Hallahan. How you doing?
Good, Willie. Sorry you had to wait so
long
this morning.
That's all right. You've had some great stuff on. It's been fun listening to it.
All right. So what's going on?
Well, first of all, I have a Brian Oler story since you had him on earlier, and it doesn't surprise me that his path and mine intersect once in a while because of what I do and what he does. Anyway, you'll remember a few months ago when I talked about the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event in Litchfield where men put on women's shoes, high heels, and walked a mile to support domestic violence. And 230 men did this. It was astonishing to watch and funny at times. Well, Brian was one of them. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, Brian's a big guy. A lot of the men there were good size, which made it the more astonishing. I would think that the laws of physics would be working against them, you know, as they're putting on these, I mean, spike heels. Anyway, I've got a video I told Brian about. He might not remember it. I'm going to get it to him. I took a video of Brian as he was finishing. Now, these guys, they're hurting by the time they've walked a mile in high heel shoes on pavement. And Brian, I've got a picture of him from the back, and he's making his way towards the tent at the end of the event on the green. And he, it's either funny or moving, depending on how you look at it. But he was definitely hurting, and as many of them were. But I got it on film, and I'll get it to him one of these days. And he shows up at a lot of events. I mean, he's all over the place. And as he's going to be today, one of the making strides of Litchfield County Walk against cancer that he's going to is one of the upcoming events. But anyway, since Brian was on, I just wanted to share that little story about him.
You should have called in. We could have had some.
You don't have enough lines for everybody who's trying to call in.
I know, but we could have had some fun with that.
Maybe he's listening. Anyway, he's a good man. He does a lot of good. This past Friday, I just want to recap a couple of things because part of what I do is not just to let people know about upcoming events, but sometimes maybe give a little bit of the backstory or thoughts about them. On Friday, the Cornwall Consolidated School, it's a grade school in Cornwall, Connecticut, had their annual walkathon. They do it every year. And what I love about the grade schools is clearly they're being taught about giving, philanthropy, and so forth. And what they do is they do in walkathons, they raise money ahead of time and bring their pledges to the event. And they split the proceeds evenly between the eighth grade class for some of their projects, and they find another maybe worldwide cause that they've researched and decided on. And this year they raise money for Water for People, which is an organization that brings drinking water to people in the world that desperately need that. So I love those events because good things are happening well beyond the event itself, and they're worth noting on air. Yesterday there were a bunch of things going on. I'll just go over them quickly because they're history. There's a new event, the Mohawk Mountain Race. It's kind of an extreme sport. There are 5 and 10K races, but they run them on the site of the Mohawk Mountain ski area. So they're running these, you know, 3 or 6 mile races up and down the ski slopes. I can't imagine what it takes to be able to do that. They must have legs like tree trunks. Hopefully the Couch Pipa golf tournament went off yesterday because it was rescheduled from early in the summer. A lot of golf tournaments got washed out and rescheduled, and hopefully they had a full contingent. Theirs is one of those fortunate golf tournaments that fill up early. They never have to worry about having enough golfers. They always fill up. But, you know, when you reschedule an event, all of a sudden it's on a weekend where you got a wedding or something to go to. Hopefully they had a full contingent, and that was successful. I went to one of my favorite events in Cornwall. It was the Little Guild Run and Wag 5K. This is This is an event, it's a 5K run where people run with their pets, with their dogs. And it's a gas. I've had a video of it on my homepage for the whole year just because I haven't come up with a better, more fun video to replace it with. And that was there was a lot going on before. Even though it rained, the rain kind of let up and then it stopped before the race. But they had a reunion. One of the things they had going on, you might remember in the paper a couple of years ago, somebody had delivered 46 of these Maltese puppies to the Little Gill. I don't remember the circumstances why there's so many, but they brought them all in at once and they found homes for all of them. Well, they held a reunion of sorts yesterday for some of them. About 8 or 9 of them showed up because probably the weather. They're just adorable little dogs. Their faces remind me of those little characters in the Star Wars movie. I can't remember what they call them, but anyway, that was fun. I got pictures of those. They had a wall of adoption where it had pictures of hundreds of dogs and cats that have been adopted over the years from the Little Guild. And you've heard me talk before about the 169 Town Society. That's a group in Connecticut dedicated to running a race in every town in Connecticut. And last week, on Saturday of Salisbury Fall Festival, we had a 5K, and the lady was honored because she had completed her 169th race that day. Well, yesterday at the Little Guild race, a woman, she ran that race, which leaves her one race short of completing the 169 town circuit twice.
Really?
Yeah, she flew from Wisconsin. She's since moved to Wisconsin to be with her grandchildren. She flew to Cornwall to run this race, and she's coming back in 2 weeks to run in Coventry a race, and then she will have completed the 169 town circuit twice. That's you know. That's incredible. That's like walking the Appalachian Trail a couple times.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. Today there's still time of the Making Strides Walk of Litchfield County for Cancer that Brian's going to. That's at the White Memorial Conservation Center that we talk about all the time. And that starts at 1 p.m. If you have any interest in going, you still got time. Some of these events, even though I'm mentioning them because they've already come and gone, the causes are still ongoing. You know, the Little Guild, for example, is a very worthy cause. It's a no-kill, no euthanization refuge for pets, for cats and dogs, and they work hard to find homes for them. Cancer that speaks for itself. This morning, also, there was a run for the hills in Great Barrington that's benefiting the Great Barrington Land Conservancy. Land preservation is a very common theme in the charities that I cover. And today also starts, today is the first of 6 Sundays at the Northwest Connecticut Rod and Gun Club where they're starting their turkey shoot series. Every Sunday from today through the middle of November, they'll be having these turkey shoots, and they're not shooting turkeys. They call them that because it's a competition, a shotgun competition where they're shooting at targets, and you win a turkey. It started back, I don't know how many years back it goes, but people would win turkeys as Thanksgiving approached. They'll do the same thing in the spring. They call them ham shoots, and they'll be holding them in advance of Easter. So. But they're very well attended. I've been to a couple of them to take pictures, and it's over at the Northwest Rod and Gun Club site on Route 7 in North Canaan. If you can't make it today, started just a few minutes ago at 11, so you probably won't make it today, but for the next 5 Sundays after today, you can go. You can bring your own shotgun. They have one there if you don't have one, like I say, they're very well attended. And also this afternoon, this is an event I found by mistake. It's called Hall for McCall, and what it is a BMX bicycle race that's being held in Torrington. There's a place called Foothills BMX. It's a facility where, if you're not familiar with BMX, they're bicycles, but they kind of mimic the motocross circuit where they're running off-road. They're going over hill and dale and bumps and corners and everything, but on bicycles. It's a very popular sport over in that neck of the woods, although many people have never heard about it. But they're having a fundraiser today for the McCall Center, which is a very worthwhile charity that the proceeds of, from this event go towards providing intervention and prevention for young people who are who have substance abuse issues. So, very worthy organization. And if I can, I might get to that after my interview. I'd like to take pictures of that. But coming up this coming week on Friday night is a Bunko tournament in Torrington. The Torrington Elks are hosting this. Bunko, it's a game. I should know more about it. I think it's a dice game, but very popular apparently as a fundraiser. It's not a sport so much, but it is a competition, and it is raising money for a cause, so that's why I include it on my site. And they're raising money for the Connecticut Children Medical Center, so very worthwhile cause there. That starts at 6:30 this coming Friday at the Torrington Elks facility. On Saturday of next week, the 20th, there's a Walk to End Alzheimer's of Dutchess County. Now, we've talked about that in recent weeks because of the Walk to End Alzheimer's in Litchfield, we've had people from Noble Horizons talking about it. Well, there's like 400 or 500 of these walks around the country because it's a national organization, and we've already talked about the one in Cheshire, Massachusetts, and the one in Litchfield, and this one is going to be this coming Saturday on the walkway over the Hudson, where many events are held, and that starts at 10:30. The Berkshire Healthcare Harvest Run 5K is going to be held next Saturday as well. That's being held at Bard College, I believe, and the Berkshire County Nursing Program will be the beneficiary of that. That starts at 10. There's a run for a cause. It's a 2-mile run in Harlington, which benefits the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. That starts at 10. That's in Harlington. It's basically put on by a family of someone who has lived with juvenile diabetes, and it starts at their home and ends at their home, and then they put on a celebration afterwards, but it's become quite popular. It's an annual event. And then the following day, on Sunday, is a walk to defeat ALS, which is also on the walkway over the Hudson. Now, these two, both the walks to end Alzheimer's and the walk to defeat ALS, are often confused because their letters, ALZ and ALS, are so close. They're being held a day apart over at the same place on the walkway over the Hudson. But Saturday is a walk to end Alzheimer's. Sunday is a walk to defeat ALS, both on the walkway over the Hudson. This is a perfect time of year. I've said it before. If you've never done the walkway, it's a converted railroad trestle that spans the Hudson River. There'll be hundreds, maybe thousands of people walking, just not because of the walk, but just because it's fall and it's a beautiful time of year, and you should do it one way or the other, whether for a cause or just for the beauty of it. And that's next Sunday. 11 o'clock start. And also next Sunday would be the second weekend of the Rod and Gun Club Turkey Shoot. So that's what we've got going on. The golf tournaments are winding down because of the time of year. There's still plenty of walks and runs going on, but yeah, that's pretty much it for the coming week.
Wow. It's still a busy week, though, Willie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty going on. Definitely plenty going on. And as the season wears down, I have to get busy trying to track down school events because there, every school, grammar school, high school in our area has fundraisers going on. They'll have a alumni basketball game or the volleyball will have a Dig Pink thing where they raise money for breast cancer. The schools are just teeming with events to raise money. They don't often raise a lot of money, but they, you know, they raise money for both their school programs or sports or for larger charities, and they're all worth covering. It's just hard to find out about them. So that's what I'll be dedicating myself to in the coming weeks.
So I heard this week that you and Jeannie are – Marshall did a pretrial last week when we were down in Florida.
Yes.
And that's going to be the new
the new format.
The new – yeah, format. That was the term I was looking for.
I thought I'd help you out.
So that sounds good. I think you two do a great job.
Well, I hope so. You're going to leave a big hole. There's no question about that. There's nothing we can do about that. But we'll do our best, you know, to keep people –
Well, you're doing a great
what's
job.
Going on.
Now, you know what? You're what you both do is – it's spot on because I couldn't follow all those things.
Well,
so now it's a good thing. They're still going to be covered.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was wondering, at these turkey shoots, does Barker go as the turkey?
Oh, boy. Here we go. I'm guessing you're getting in your last few weeks of digs.
I was just wondering if he goes as the turkey. I mean,
no, he spends his Sunday mornings over at the ski jumps because there's always a lot going on there. So no, he doesn't go to the turkey shoots. At least he hasn't yet.
I was in the turkey shoots. They put out frozen turkeys and
you shot them. Yeah. So Willie, tell me about the Brewski Fest because I was away.
You were, yeah, and you were missed.
Well, I wasn't missed. Randy said he did a fine job. He didn't need me bullying him around like I always do.
It was very successful. The crowd was not as big as it was last year. I'm not sure why. Well, I do know why. There's so many events going on. You know, there are fall festivals all over the place, including the one that the Brewski was a part of in Salisbury. But Millerton had something going on, and there's a massive garlic festival in Bethlehem, Connecticut, which seems like a long ways away. But a lot of people around here went. I talked. People were telling me about it. There's a music festival at the Goshen Fairgrounds. There was just stuff going on all over the place. So we're grateful for the crowd we had. It was a good one. It was successful. The weather was fine. You know, it was warm. It was a perfect beer tasting day. And that the golf ball roll was successful. And the winner, the friend of Swasa, donated his winnings. It was a 50-50 sort of situation. And he gave the money back to Swasa. We're grateful
nice.
For that. And as always, people took pumpkins. You know, as we announced the end of the wrap up of the event at 4 o'clock, and take a pumpkin home with you. And people did. Some people grabbed. You know, the pumpkins we get them from Daisy Hill, as we've said, and they're great to us. And we get those two big containers. I don't know how many hundreds of pumpkins we have. We use them for decorations, and then people take them home. But they go from small, you know, little ones we put on the tabletops to big ones, you know, big, huge pumpkins. And the people who picked up the big ones then realized how far they had to go back to their car. Because, you know, they like Jump Fest, so people park in the lot, you know, and then they walk in. It's a couple hundred yards anyway, I think, up that road. They buy the ticket on the way in and so forth. But on the way back with an extra 35 or 40 pounds of pumpkin, I think they realized they may have been better off with a smaller one. But anyway, everybody had fun. Everybody got a pumpkin. We ended up with 40. I say we. State Line Wine and Spirits is actually the host of the event. We, Swasa, are the beneficiaries of it, but they put it on. They did a great job. We ended up netting out 40 breweries. We had 42 and a couple of them didn't show, but 40 breweries, you know, and the demands on the breweries' time is considerable. I mean, these people are going to an event every single weekend because beer tastings are, you know, they're hugely popular, and these folks, you know, they're covering a lot of ground. So we're grateful to get all the breweries we get. And everybody, you know, I try to poll as many people as I can afterwards to see if they had a good time. Everybody did. Nobody had any complaints of any kind. And hopefully the Sunday in the Country folks made money because they seem to be busy.
Yeah, Billy said, well, I don't know the numbers, but he said it was good over there. Pat Dineen said he worked there for a while. He said it was quite busy, actually. He, for some reason, he thought the crowd was bigger than normal. You said it was a little bit smaller.
It was a little bit smaller, yeah. I don't know by how many. I'm not.
People must have been spending money because they were buying food for sure.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yep. So, yeah. Thank you for asking. It was quite successful. I don't know the numbers yet, but, yeah, we're happy. We're thrilled. And Our next event will be the ski swap in the 1st of December. And the way this year is going, I mean, it's going to be like next week. The time just flies so fast.
It seems like it for sure.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I think we've got some interviews coming up with Jeannie, so I want to make sure we get those on.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what, the scarecrows that I saw before we left to go to Florida, they were awesome.
Oh, they were. They were. And Salisbury Boys School, as always, I don't know if you saw, though, they might not have put those out before you left, but they had these massive dogs.
No, I didn't. And you know who told me about it? It was my mother-in-law when she went to the hairdresser. Pat picked her up to go to the hairdresser.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took her out when I got back to go out for a drink, have a glass of wine. And she drove by the White Hart. She said, there was dogs over there yesterday. They were beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought she was crazy.
I don't know what they were shy. You know, they looked like they were ceramic.
Yeah,
except they were big cars.
You know,
they were huge, and just astonishing. The art department there, I guess, does them every year, and every year they amaze. Every year is like more amazing than the year before.
Well, that's good though. So,
it looked like
that part of it was a success. So,
yeah, the crowd Saturday. I helped with the race because they used the ski jumps. It's the registration point, the start and finish. And then we started setting up for the brewski. So I had reason to be in and out of town. And the crowd, it was kind of a misty day. It was a funny kind of precipitation. It wasn't really raining, but it was heavier than a mist. It was something in between. But it didn't hold back the crowds. I mean, Saturday especially, the town seemed as busy as it always is during the weekend. So I'm guessing it was successful.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
They worked hard at it for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
There was something else I was going to tell you, but I forgot what it was now. So
I'll save it for next week.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to get on a little bit earlier next week. But, you know, with this November 6th coming up,
I'm glad to get on whenever I can. And, you always have good guests on, and the political season, of course, is on us, and people need to know that stuff.
How about that 20-year-old that won the best cow in the world?
That's incredible.
Just goes to show you, you know, you guys deal with kids wanting to learn to ski jump. Some people teach kids how to show cows. How cool is that?
Yeah, well, you know, the agricultural industry, I don't know much about it. Probably all I know is what I hear on your show. But clearly, the older generations, like this boy spoke of his grandfather and so forth, and the older generations clearly understand that to perpetuate their way of life, they have to engage the young people.
And absolutely.
And there are all these programs, 4-H and probably a dozen others that are all meant to do that. And not only do they teach kids agriculture, but just life lessons and so forth. And the young man spoke so well. Clearly, I'm guessing he went through probably FFA or something like it, where they take public speaking. They do all that stuff, all to help perpetuate the agrarian way of life. And if every single industry did that, we probably wouldn't be having to worry about young people staying in the area. It would be taken care of.
Agrarian way of life.
Agrarian, yeah. You know,
agrarian.
Farming.
Farming.
Farming. I didn't know what that term was. You know what, Willie? You totally amazed me with your vocabulary.
Well, I studied the thesaurus extensively before I call in, just so I can have a big word for you.
The what?
Thesaurus.
Yeah, what the hell is that, Willie?
Rocher?
Paul, help me out
here. Yeah, the Rocher's thesaurus.
Yeah.
It's
like
now I know what it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your lack of vocabulary skills is egregious.
Really?
He's not kidding anybody. He likes to
but
play
uneducated
kind of. Yeah, but he's shrewder than we know.
I've only got 3 weeks left here.
Thank the Lord.
So
you guys
can throw as many big words at me as you want to.
Okay.
Uh-huh. All right.
Okay, you can do that.
Okay.
Well, Willie, keep up the good work. And once again, it's sportingacause.com.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. Yep. Thank you so much. Thanks
for
having me on.
No golf today?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, say hi to all
those
folks.
Those days are dwindling, too. We got to get those in while we can.
I got to tell you something, Willie. I went to the roast beef dinner last night at Legion Post 126 here in Sharon, which was absolutely phenomenal. Guess who I ran into? Digby and Jeannie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those people get around.
Well, Digby gave me a great big hello, shook my hand. Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
Jeannie blew me off. She didn't even want to talk to me.
Really? Well, she's probably doing an interview or something.
Oh, yeah, she's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Willie, you have a great day. And,
okay.
As
well,
always,
me too.
Great job, bud.
Thanks. You too.
Have a good day.
Bye.
All right.
You've never heard of Roche's?
No. How long are Jeannie's interviews, Chad?
The one I'm looking at is 4 minutes and 22 seconds.
All right, let's play that. We're going to get those in this week because we've failed the last couple of weeks. Unless she chooses to call in.
You weren't here last week, so how could you fail?
If she chooses to call in, we'll stop the interview.
All right, here we go.
Right in the middle.
Folks, you're out and about with Gene Salater from WHDD Radio, RobinHoodRadio.com, and I am at a big old party in a big old warehouse where we are celebrating the 90th year of being in business for William Perotti & Sons Plumbing and Heating. And I have the great fortune to isolate my fellow Bud Light drinking friend, Bill. Bill, tell us your name, where you're from.
My name's Bill Madden. I'm from Torrington, Connecticut.
And you work here at Perotti's how many years now?
About 3.5 years.
3.5 years, and what is your role? What do you do? What's a day in the life of Bill?
I do plumbing installations, plumbing service. The jobs vary quite enormously. I mean, we do water heater replacements, bathroom remodels, new houses, all kinds of stuff. So I do all of it.
What's your favorite part?
I like the new installations. I like doing new plumbing for new houses and just being a part of the whole construction process and watching buildings come up.
So you come here, you punch in, you have a cup of coffee, or you hit the road? How does it work?
Usually have the cup of coffee first, but yeah, we come in, punch in, and then get our materials and head out unless we're going directly to a job and the materials are already there. But yeah, just that's a typical day.
This warehouse, I don't know, how many square feet? Just give it a guess. You would know way better than me.
I don't even either. It's pretty good size. I mean, we've got, you know, an entire sheet metal shop in here with all our, and we have a bunch of stock for service parts and whatnot, and an office as well. So
yeah, the small parts inventory is like the stacks in a law school. It just goes on and on. You can totally get lost in there. And you've sectioned some of it off with various materials so that people don't get lost, I think, is the whole point there. So talk to us about the Perottis. What was your first experience? And what's your favorite part about this family?
I mean, it's just a great environment to work in, to see the generations of, you know, the Perottis here. They're all extremely easy to work with and very, very family-oriented, and it's a pleasure to work with them. Like I said, I get to deal with, you know, all different generations. My current employer, Champ, and his father, Frank, who was the president before him, and now I get to work with his son also, Champ's son also, Will. And, you know, just to have him in the field and show him some of the things before he actually takes over, it's nice. It's very nice.
That's cool. A little bit, Bill, about your history. How did you get into the plumbing and heating industry, specifically plumbing? Where did you go to school? And how long along were you when they hired you here at Perotti?
I started off at trade school in Oliver Wolcott Tech in Torrington. I had an apprenticeship with a company in New Hartford. And then also, after that company had fallen out, I went to another company in Newington. And so I had about 10 years experience before I ended up winding up here. And luckily, I had all that experience when I showed up here, so that I fit perfectly into the mold that, you know, they were looking for at the time, which was, you know, a little bit of service and a little bit of, and mostly new installations.
Hot stuff. Okay, now, Bill, the tough question. Think back. You've been here a couple of years now. Give us a quick, funny, anecdotal story about, oh, I don't know, something in the plumbing world that just made you chuckle that you went home and told your buddies about. You wouldn't believe what happened to me today. I'm going to give you a moment to think about that. Because I know from being in the industry, I know there are a couple of them. There might be a winter one. There might be something with a pool. Could be anything.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. There's a lot of stories. If you come here after hours at work, you'll hear a lot of them. I'm just trying to come up with one that I can think of for myself.
Or how about talk about your favorite customer without naming them?
Oh, we've got a lot of good customers. I mean, there's plenty of customers we have that, you know, are pleasant throughout the day, bring coffee, donuts for you to have while you're working. It's We have a lot of really nice customers. I think that's another part of what really makes this company special. We have a lot of good people that we work for as well.
That's great. Yeah. All right, I'm going to let you off the hook.
Thank you, because like I can't come up with one quickly enough. Yeah.
You're stuck in the headlights. Thank you, Bill, so much for your time. This is Gene Salater out and about for WHDD, RobinHoodRadio.com.
All right, we're back to our live broadcast of Hometown Sunday Morning on Robin Hood Radio. I'm Chad.
Just Chad?
Just Chad.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dave. We'll twist it up the last few weeks we got.
Yes.
Anyway, congratulations to Parati Plumbing up there in Canaan. I've been friends with them for probably since I was in, I want to say, 12 years old. I worked at an estate down here, weeding gardens and stuff when I was a young kid.
Oh, really?
And Frank Parati did all the plumbing and air conditioning work at this particular estate down on South Main Street. And I got to be very good friends with him over the years, and I'm still good friends with him. And I've got to tell you what, that company is A1, A1 when it comes to any kind of HVAC or plumbing needs, heating, very meticulous. And congratulations to them all those years in the business. Frank and Charlie, and Frank's son,
Charlie.
Champ. Congratulations to them.
Is it Parati or Parodi?
It's Parati in Canaan, Paul. We've been through this 1,000 times. Now, let me see. It's 11:43, and once again, folks, the volunteers in Sharon, the fire department and the ambulance are going out because there's an emergency call. It just goes to show you that any time of day or night, we have dedicated volunteers, much like Brian Oler was talking about, that need to be taken care of in one way or the other because they're volunteering their time. They're on the road going to somebody that's in need. And that's what it's all about. So anyway, in the point standings, with the chase going on, there's only 12 drivers left in the NASCAR series. They're racing at Talladega today at 2 p.m. on NBC. Kevin Harvick currently is the leader. He leads Kyle Busch by 5 points, Martin Truex Jr. by 32 points, Joey Logano by 37. Chase Elliott, who won last week at Dover, Delaware, is already into the next round, so it makes no difference to him. Kurt Busch is sixth. Brad Keselowski, Ryan Blaney, Eric Amarola, Clint Boyer, Kyle Larson, and Alex Bowman round out the top 12. There's two more races until they wind it down to 8, and then they race 3 more and 4 more go. And they'll be down to 4 people going for the championship. So right now it's
Jimmy Johnson.
Right in the heart, Johnson's out. Uh-huh. So right now it's going to be Chase Elliott because he has a win. Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr. going into the next round if it was to end today. Somebody's got to win to get into the next round or have very high points. So with that being said. We only had one interview from her?
Yeah.
Yep.
I have a little something I want to read.
Can you
I
do?
Read a little something? Yeah.
Sure. What do you want to read? Something from the New York Post?
No. This is an original composition.
How long is it going to take, Paul? Are you timed out? Oh, my God almighty. Now you look like Larry. You got tight.
I typed it up.
All right, go ahead.
I didn't write it out in longhand and all
this
that other
is
stuff.
All your. This
it's
is
all me.
Okay, yeah. Bud.
You don't mind?
No, not at all.
Okay. Let me just take a look because this is nerve wracking.
It's nerve wracking.
Nerve wracking. One afternoon in August 2002, I was walking up Lexington Avenue. When out of the corner of my eye, I noticed something staring at me. There in the shop window. I can't go on.
You want me to read it? Yeah, read it.
Yeah.
I certainly will. One afternoon in August 2002, I was walking up Lexington Avenue when out of the corner of my eye, I noticed something staring at me. There's a shop window was a puppy with big brown eyes. I didn't know why the puppy kept staring, so I went in to say hello. A clerk in the store took the puppy out of her enclosure and introduced her to me. We went upstairs to have a little play date with a rubber ring that I would throw and the puppy would bring back. A few days later, I went back to the store for another play date, and when that was finished, I walked out of the door with a new pet. When we got home to my apartment, I put her on a leash and took her for a walk around the neighborhood. Little did I know that this four-month-old Jack Russell Terrier was strong as a horse and ran so fast that she was pulling me on the pavement. Within 2 days, she had broken her leash, and I ended up running after her in the streets of Manhattan, fortunately without any harm done to dog or passerbys. Thus, she was named Zipper for her ability to zip through the crowded New York streets. Those walks began our great adventures. When she was a puppy, I would put Zipper on my shoulder like a parrot, and we would go to and fro on our business. We walked for miles and miles in city and country, and Zipper always had something to chase or some some comment on a passing scene. Strangers would stop us and admire her speckled left ear and her friendly disposition. Zipper loved everyone she met, but her love of humans didn't translate to love of other animals, except for other dogs. I remember the first time she met a pig, a donkey, and a bear. Those were not happy memories. But most of all, I remember when she met her first cat. I never knew what the expression hair standing on end meant. Zipper's hair was definitely in a vertical position. No love was lost between her and the feline race. Zipper's favorite time was going for a ride in a car. She would sit on my lap and help me steer or just look out the window. Yes, it was crazy and dangerous, but we drove thousands of miles across the country on highways and back roads, always taking time out to walk in new places. A few years ago, Zipper got tired of walking and even playing, although she never got tired of going for a drive and looking out the window. Walking became difficult, then labored, then impossible, and she died peacefully on October 2nd. All she asked from me was food, water, and a warm place to sleep. What she gave me was 16 years of faithful companionship and enthusiastic greetings every time I saw her. Which of us got the better bargain? May she rest in peace. How cool is that? Zipper.
Hey, Chad, open up this mic.
Oh, I gotta turn it on.
I just want to say, I know how hard it is. And to write something like that, when I lost Clyde 2 weeks ago, and Clyde was a rescue, and Clyde came in with Genghis. And Clyde was 12 years old when they got him. And I had him now 8 years, so he lived to be good old age. Genghis is still alive. But even though you know that the end is coming, and you try to do what you can, nothing, and I mean nothing, can stop the hurt when it happens.
No, it's hard.
Nothing. And it's just tough. And that was that was so beautiful. I mean, instead of writing letters, whenever I lose one of my family, I play a song for them on the air, because I could never ever get through reading it. I just couldn't.
That was unbelievable what he wrote.
Yeah, and I just wanted to come in and commend you on that. It's a real hard thing to do. You must have shed tears when you typed that out. I mean,
well,
yeah, people that don't have pets, and I use the term pets because that's what everybody understands, but they become family. Family. I know there's people out there that say to me, "That's ridiculous. It's not crazy."
No.
It's not crazy. It's just there's a bond there that's just unbelievable.
It's
like the other night, I cooked a chicken, and when I used to take the chicken apart, because my grandmother taught me how to debone a chicken, the first one always there waiting was Clyde, and he'd sit there right when he'd look at the chicken. He wouldn't go after it. He'd look at it. with those memories, and they stay with you. That's the great thing about those memories, though, after the hurt goes away. And I still feel a little queasy about talking about Clyde. But after the hurt goes away, you have the memories. They're just amazing. And you know, Dave, it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
You just know.
We've had many dogs.
Yeah. There's. Let me tell you what.
Luther.
They're the dogs, animals. I don't care what kind of animal it is. They become part of your family. And certainly Zipper was a part of your family. I remember that, you and that dog walking around Millerton before I even knew you.
Oh, yeah.
I said, who's this nut? He'd like, see him walking way over by Rudd Pond. He'd go all the way up past Rudd Pond with this little Jack Russell dog. And I'm saying, this guy's nuts.
But I got to tell you,
you walked all over the place.
When Dave was reading that and he said about not other animals, I was going to adopt. I was going to adopt a Jack Russell.
Oh boy!
Rescue, and then we found out that Jack Russells do not like cats.
No,
they don't like. There's very few other animals that they like. They're great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's just the way it is, and that's what when people adopt animals and they don't investigate and find out things like that.
Yeah,
and they. You have to really know what, but yeah, Jack Russells, they're cute. They're unbelievable, but boy, you get near that.
Well, weren't they bred to be rodent hunters, right?
Rodent hunters,
you know, go down in holes and all that stuff, right? No, seriously.
Oh, she would jump up on my kitchen cabinets.
Yeah.
Oh, she was like amazing how much she could jump.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry there, Paul. Because nothing makes you feel okay when that happens.
Well, so now he's got to get another one.
No.
Yeah, I said the same thing. Look at what I got in the car now, Paul.
Yeah, I know.
I got two crazy nuts in the car.
You do.
All right?
No, I'm thinking I'm going to get married instead.
You are?
Yeah.
I think you'd be better off getting a dog, Paul.
Anyone who wants
to call in. I think it'd be easier.
I hate to tell you, but I really do think you'd be better off getting a dog.
And you know what? The dog's never going to sue you.
Yeah, that's right.
I know Pat's daughter is unmarried. She's single.
Oh, jeez. At this point, I'll say so long, but I was a great –
that was very touching.
I loved my dog.
Yeah. Of course you loved your dog. It was your life. Let's play Angel Among Us to end up this edition of Hometown Sunday Morning Chat. Once again, we'll be back with more of Hometown Sunday Morning next week. Want to thank all the guests that came in today. Great job by everyone that came in. Brian Oler, Chris Cannon, Kyle Barton, and his lovely girlfriend, Francesca. And of course, Willie Hallahan. And how about Jeannie Salater doing an anniversary party for Parati Plumbing?
She's out there, and she's sending them by Dropbox. And as a matter of fact, Willie and Gene now have their own space on her on-demand page.
Uh-oh. Wow.
Out and about with Gene Salater. She stole that from you. And then Willie Hallahan with his Sporting a Cause. They've got their own page now where their stuff goes up.
Good God almighty.
I know.
Don't tell Jeannie that she stole it, though. She didn't steal anything from me.
Well, that's okay. We're going to start calling the shows Sunday in the Country when you go. That's a real big theft.
It doesn't make any difference. Call it whatever you want to. That's what I've always said. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more Hometown Sunday Morning next week.
I was walking home from school on a cold winter day. Took a shortcut to the woods, and I lost my way. It was getting late, and I was scared and alone. Then a kind old man took my hand and led me home. Mama couldn't see him, but he was standing there. But I knew in my heart he was the answer to my prayer. Oh, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come.
out of guilt and guide us with the light of love. When life held troubled times and had me down on my knees, there's always been someone to come along and comfort me. Kind word from a stranger to lend a helping hand, a phone call from a friend just to say I understand. Now ain't it kind of funny, at the dark end of the road, someone lights the way with just a single ray of hope. Whoa, there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours to show us how to live, to teach us how to give, and guide us with the light of love. They wear so many faces, show up in the strangest places, grace us with their mercies in our time of need. Whoa, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to in our darkest hours to show us how to live, to teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love, to guide us with the light of love.